Yeah. Oh,
man. I feel like I should be going back to sleep, man. It's just, it's hard. And I mean, getting Barcelona time, I'm supposed to be getting up right now, and I've been up all night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jet lag is pretty brutal.
Yeah, it just never gets old. I always think I'm going to be able to beat it somehow. Like, I never truly adjusted to Barcelona time because I also never slept well there. So I thought maybe it'll be fine. Maybe I'll just come back here and, like, the body's like, hey, I'm back to normal. No. The body's like, you owe us sleep. We need certain amount of hours.
I mean, like, you owe us. And
it is.
You will pay.
You will pay dearly, my friend. It's a bank that you can never withdraw from and never think about redepositing. You got to redeposit those hours. So, yeah, long story short, I'm exhausted. But I'm still excited about all the stuff that happened this week. I mean, I can't believe it is this week.
A lot of stuff happened.
A lot of stuff happened. A lot of things got announced. A lot of things got showcased. Things got teased. And, you know, I actually got a Genshin Impact OnePlus 12R delivered today. It's like, okay.
Hey, good for you.
I know. I just like, it explains the purple thing behind me because they also.
are you playing the Genshin? Is that a game that you're
I do into? Play Genshin. Yeah. So Genshin Impact for me is it's like an on and off game. I play it depending on the systems that I get. So if I'm playing with budget, more like, you know, low budget devices and stuff like that, I don't play it as much because it just doesn't have a great smooth experience. But typically, like, let's say with the Magic 6 Pro or stuff like that, yeah, I load up the game and it's one of my testing games as well. I always make sure to install it and stress test the heck out of a phone.
I understand why. Mm-hmm. Someone was like really snarky in my comments, and you're like, well, the reason is because it's so poorly optimized for Android. That's how you can see if a phone really does perform better. And I'm like, what a ludicrously stupid thing to tell me. I'm not going to sit here and play a game because it's bad on a platform.
I'll say this.
Do they support controllers yet?
No.
Have they optimized the graphics to at least match what the iPhone is putting out? Even though our GPUs are now more powerful than the A-series chips?
I don't think... the thing is, yeah, no. I don't think that...
They're not doing anything!
I don't think that that's their goal. I think their goal is to say, hey, we exist on the other side.
This, to me, is the difference between someone who's just playing the game because they want to have fun playing the game, and I'm playing this game to show you frames per second for a benchmark. Like, I don't enjoy playing the game, so I'm not going to sit here and try and make that a benchmark test, because then I have to spend more time with the game, and we already know it is less well optimized for this platform than it would be on an iPhone. So what is our... The only reason you want me to do that is to say, but the iPhone is better, and, like, I'm not going to play that game. I'm not going to play Genshin Impact, and literally, I'm not going
to. Yeah, if you're setting it up,
join that commentary.
If you're trying to set it up to fail, then yeah, maybe. I will say though, the HN3 or the 12 plays the Genshin Impact a little bit better for me. It doesn't get as warm. The HN2 does perform well, and obviously the 12R can handle it very easily. We're talking not only flagship processor, but also a lot of RAM, a lot of storage, all the good stuff. If you don't push it to the highest resolution with 60 frames per second, the game is actually pretty nicely enjoyable. It doesn't stress the system as much as we're able to push it with it. It's just such an easy push, and I understand why they like to say it. But at the end of the day, you know, the game itself is enjoyable. You don't have to stress your system so that it gets overheating and prove a point. It's like, you know, we play Undead Horde, right? Very few devices can play it at full potential, but it's still enjoyable at 60 or 90 frames per second. I'm not going to say, like, it's trash. Call of Duty is nice at 120, but again, still playable at 90 or 60. I'm like, you got to enjoy the game if you like the game. And if you're just trying to, you know, make beef between Android and iOS.
I love these, like, 60 frames per second. That's something my Steam Deck can't do. So isn't that... Shouldn't we be saying, like, hey, that's actually pretty good? Hey, everybody, we're going to keep talking about gaming here for just a second because we're both old, obnoxious, tired tech nerds. But this is a tech podcast, and we will get on to a whole slew of MWC recap and phones that came out and watches mm-hmm. that we're wearing and oh, yes. all
finally,
kinds of
finally
gear.
We can show which
yes you can actually just hold it up.
It was in a few of my videos leading up to the week leading up
no
to,
one noticed
nobody
I was like I've got this bright silver casing watch and like no one was like hey what's that I felt a little yeah
like part of me was like okay I wish I don't get it but
do you guys not like, care like,
let's see who catches it.
Well, how, I mean, how dare you?
You call yourself no. Like you guys are pretty, are very great. I will say somebody did catch me on my Inception bit in the Xiaomi 14 video. That was nice. Mm. Somebody called me out on my. We haven't done the Inception, you know, back in the days with my show.
Yeah,
do the whole picture in picture with the whoa kind of thing, all the cool stuff. So I did that with the 12, with the Xiaomi 14 and my 13 Pro because they do that. They have that director mode option that you have,
yep.
with HyperOS. So yeah. Anyways, that was it is something I wish somebody would have seen. But at the end of the day, it is definitely something that's exciting for me because it is one of my most enjoyed watches to date. Like I really like what we're getting here with the Watch 2. The combination of the ecosystems that they're deciding to dip into both sides makes mm-hmm. perfect sense to me. And
well, I was going to bring up some more gaming stuff. Do we just want to talk about the watch?
Let's finish up the game because
like we said watch, and then you were like, "Let me tell you all about the specs on the watch," and you're like,
"Well, no, it wasn't even about the specs. I meant the experience out of it. The specs have been said to death, and we kind of touched base on that also on Monday during the SDG QA. But so from a gaming experience, I'll say this: it is truly enjoyable when you're able to play a game that is optimized for the ecosystem that you're in. But it's also truly enjoyable when you play a game, even at 60 frames per second. I mean, Cyberpunk 2077 is actually enjoyable at 60 frames per second if it's playing correctly on tech and hardware that doesn't stutter at 60. Like it's a smooth 60 frames. We remember LG. We talked about it a long time ago. Actually, I think you brought it up. It's 60 frames per second on the V60 across the entire UI, making the UI seem very smooth. It's when you have that janky on and off, on and off, off again, type of experience, that's when you start like noticing like, oh my god,
a spike in frame rate and then a plummet and then a spike and then a plummet. So I don't know who needs to hear this, but if you're a fan of wacky little cartoony twin stick shooters like I am, and we've talked about games like Undead Horde, Netflix just published Rainbow Six SMOL.
I saw that. I didn't Rainbow install Six it, but it, I saw small, that. Yeah.
Because they're like small versions of a Rainbow Six team in these adorable little almost like papercraft cutout animated figurine style presentation. Like there's no dialogue. They did not pay for voice actors. It's that like digital gibberish. Like, and I just wish they wouldn't do anything. Just give me the subtitles.
Don't
give me the turkey clucking as gobble sounds.
That's how they talk. The
gameplay is pretty good, and again, it's unit management. So you know, you go in there and you shoot, but you also have backup abilities from your other little cohorts, and it is in that perfect little bite-sized chunk where one map. Because we've talked about this before. Like I might in between editing a video, eating dinner with my family, and trying to get ready for bed, I might have 10 whole minutes of uninterrupted time that I can sit down and play. And that could be two maps in Rainbow Six Small. I guess that's what I'm getting tonight.
Hey, we're getting you going in the right direction. At least it's a Rainbow Six game, which essentially is closer to Call of Duty to a certain point.
Isometric top-down twin stick shooter.
I purely meant on titles. I wasn't even referring to the game mechanics and the gameplay. No. Don't get me wrong.
I'll have you know, I have finally rolled credits on RoboCop Rogue City. And that is a first-person shooter. It took me so long because after, you know, 10 minutes of gameplay,
I'm not ignoring you. I'm just tweeting the show. I totally
forgot. No, it's good. We should let people know that we're doing a show or something. But like after about 10 minutes of gameplay, I'm ready to projectile vomit. I just can't handle the movement in modern first-person shooters. So I did force myself to kind of plow through. And I'm glad I did. It is a really charming sort of RoboCop sequel, the RoboCop 3 that we probably deserved. But yeah, it's pretty rough. So anyway, if you're looking at something that is absolutely not going to tax a $1,000 plus premium high end flagship rock 'em sock 'em smartphone, Rainbow Six Small has been a delightful little romp through the cartoony world of stopping terrorists and throwing grenades at people. And I feel like you should get, if you're paying for Netflix, it's included. You've already bought the game. So, if you're subscribed to Netflix, you've already spent money on it. So you might as well play it and give it a shot.
Question for you. Do we know if the games are available even on the lowest paid tier, like the ad supported tier, or is it purely like to top tier? Cause I've never had, I haven't tried the ad supported version. Yeah.
I at this point, if they get rid of our single screen lowest paid tier, our basic plan, have the least we can pay Netflix and not get ads. If they do away with that, then we're just going to cancel Netflix. But we'll only turn it on when there's something we specifically want to watch. I'm not going to play this game of continuing to give Netflix more and more money for the same basic-ish.
It's harder. So on the flight that I, on my flights, I decided to download the Airbender, the Final Airbender, the new series that they just posted, because I wanted something that was longer to watch. I finally watched season two of Barry also on the flight. I find myself watching more TV shows on this flight, on this trip, than movies. They didn't have really a lot of good movie selections. The strike that went on for some time last year, we're still feeling
it takes a long time for Hollywood machine to start back up.
And it was very obvious in the selection of movies that were available on the plane. So I ended up basically, like I said, I never did finish watching season two of Barry, and I'm like, oh, interesting. The ending was interesting. I always found the show, I don't know if it's supposed to be comedy, but it's like very light, dark comedy.
I don't know. It's supposed to be a comedy.
Like a lot of it.
It is a dark dramedy.
It is dark drama, but it's more like the characters in the show that.
Well, sure, you were firing up Airbender though. Obviously, you must have hated it because it's a live action remake of a beloved animation franchise, and we're not allowed to like things when they change formats.
We had the movie first, and then now we have a TV show. I'm still in mixed feelings. I haven't finished it. I'm only like four episodes in, but I was like, it's interesting. I'll say it's interesting. It follows the same timeline. It's not a very different approach. It's just different characters and the storyline. You know,
I don't understand why we feel the need to make an epic fantasy show. That worked so well in the medium that it was originally created in.
Anime type, yep.
Why we felt this need, we had to take this and make it with real actors because...
It's Luffy. This is why. It's the impact of what Luffy did last time, and they think that the Avatar can do it again.
I don't know. I don't get it because the world of Avatar is so fantastic. Avatar the Last Airbender, James Cameron. The ways of the dances with wolves.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It is so perfectly of its animation roots. And you can't in live action capture the same sense of scale. The timeline gets all messed up.
Yep.
You have so many more production concerns and so much more overhead. Just think about like the idea of like how many times we've used animation to abbreviate exposition. Like in the Kill Bill movies, the Lucy Liu character has like a whole backstory. And rather than taking a second unit director of photography out to shoot extras and other, like a young Asian girl actor portraying all of this, they fell back on a hyper real sense of using anime as part of that history and of that backstory. But Avatar, the Last Airbender is so wonderfully encapsulated in that. You will immediately compare the live action version of this to the animation, and the animation kind of plays with your imagination more. So there's no way they can create real people doing bending.
It doesn't, in any way,
that doesn't, like, it's never going to resonate the same way that the animation kind of filled my brain.
And, the animation, I feel like, did it, we were introduced to the animation first, and this is truly, a lot of it feels, I mean, not to take away any credit from the actors and the characters that were, you know, they're trying to portray. Mm-hmm. It's just, you're right.
It's mostly production concerns. Cause like, I think the cast is phenomenal. I think the cast is fantastic. Cast is absolutely phenomenal. I don't have anything about, yeah.
It is absolutely coming down to production style. It is, I'll say this, it's a lot better than I thought it was going to be, especially in the open world. And when they're starting to show us like the firebenders coming in with their ship. And then we see, I forget the name of the actor, but the guy that plays on Kim Convenience. What's his name?
The
one that plays Appa, the dad, basically. But this time, like, mm-hmm. obviously, we love him in Star Wars as well. But this time, like, the full,
yeah.
actor, like, oh my god, doesn't even look like him. It was interesting. I wasn't as convinced about this as when we went with One Piece. One Piece for me fit a little bit more because it punched in on the action a lot more. You saw Luffy jumping in, bouncing, bending, all the different things in there. I feel like it was a lot more action. This one's a lot more talking, and a lot of scenes of just basically listening to dialogue. And I'm like, can we jump to the action? Can we jump into doing more, a little bit more? You know, the Avatar character was played nicely, although like they showed us different parts. They were a little bit more revealing in this one than I guess the movie was, but they had to stretch it to make it fit the 8 or 9 episodes that we have. So at the end of the day, you're right. Was it needed? No. Was it somebody's idea? Probably to see, can we make more live action of anime? Yeah. I think it's a series of think what Netflix has been doing. I don't know if they're going to continue it, but it's something.
I'll be curious to see how it plays out because Netflix is also notorious for not really letting shows complete.
Oh,
but also, it's weird to me mm-hmm. that the original animated series had 2 extra hours in book one to accomplish book one, which means you're squeezing out character arcs, character development.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are going to be like, oh, Sokka and the wokeism. I bet you a part of that was just, we don't have an extra 2 hours to give Sokka the right arc. And if we abbreviate him being kind of misogynistic at the beginning of the story, and we don't do this right, then it's going to look way worse. So what if we just kind of simplified his character because the core crux of book one and what Aang's discovery is like core to this part of the story. So you've got to sacrifice. Again, you're immediately going to run up against how well fleshed out these characters got. But that show had 20 half-hour episodes
mm-hmm.
against Netflix's 8 1-hour episodes.
Exactly.
So each contained story is also going to be done a disservice if you try to match the overall flow or the timeline of that. And whatever excuses the production team wants to say, like, well, this is what we're doing to translate it, it's literally 2 hours less of the story that you're going to get. They don't have the budget to do everything that they would have done in animation.
As they got closer and closer, like over the hump on this, they realized like this is getting way more than what we thought it was going to be, and we need mm-hmm. to start editing and condensing down and start, you know, figuring out how to shrink the story down to make it fit the budget.
Which at that point, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there.
No, please.
Get so cranky about the way that producers in Hollywood and producers that work at major studios always feel like their version is going to be more important than the source material.
Yeah, if
it's comic books to comic book movies, look at how many times they've taken the loose framework of an incredible comic book story, but then we can't do all the nerdy, dorky comic book nerd stuff. We're going to make it for legitimate audience. And then you're like, but this is crap now. You missed the whole point out of why we called this comic run Civil War. You know, like, the second you're saying things like, oh, yeah, well, we've got to edit, we've got to trim, we've got to do this. I don't remember sitting through book one and rewatching it and binging it and feeling like, you know what would be better is if this were 2 hours shorter.
2 hours shorter. I think they went like four episodes of fluff. We could have just built without it.
It's like in Amadeus where the king is like, I don't know, too many notes. They're just cut some of the notes and Mozart, you will have a perfect symphony. And you're like, I never felt that way about The Last Airbender. I felt like it was pretty spot on. There was not a lot of fat to trim from that. That's the thing.
The anime side is so iconic. It was drawn out. It was the animation was done right. The character development was done right. It's just.
And like I'm sorry. I kind of feel like they've done it so much better. Mm-hmm. But there are still moments where the idea of real physical actors doing the moves for bending is kind of silly.
It works so much better. It just did not look natural, which is the weirdest part ever.
It's tough. Like,
he's supposed to be the airbender. This is the thing, right? This is before he starts learning all the other bending styles. It just, to me, it gets the concept a little bit.
It's a little off.
Yeah, it's a little bit off.
Yeah.
It's a little bit off. And I wonder. Yeah, it's a tough one. I think they should have been some reshoots. There should have been some edits, maybe a better editing team or something like that.
Well, you got money for reshoots. They don't have money to do 2 hours of this story.
Get the better animators. You know, maybe that's what happened.
I think that's a part of it, though, when you're saying, yeah, like, oh, look at this animation and maybe they needed some reshoots. I think this is the opposite of how Sony Animation Studios learned the right lessons, mm-hmm, for the Miles Morales films.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's CG, but it's done in a comic style where the CG model is distorted to fit the animation, to fit the emotion of the moment.
Yeah.
The models are not perfectly static, you know, perfectly proportioned. Everything always looks completely accurate from moment to moment. There are times where they distort the characters to kind of imbue them with something emotional. It's a very hyper-dramatic thing that we do in comic books. It's a traditional animation technique. Yeah. Like, you watch the original Little Mermaid movie, and you compare it against the live action, and King Triton, Javier Bardem is an incredible actor, but he can't distort his face to show the anger of a moment like the animated King Triton could, right? Because his face doesn't stay proportioned to what a human face would do. It is this grimace of like incredible anger, and Javier Bardem by comparison is going to look like a dude on sedatives, you know. Like, when you see Aang is like flying through the air and he's on that little ball of air that he can generate in the animated series, they are warping his form to show the speed, to show the dramatic action, to kind of imbue him with that energy, and you can't do that in live action without it looking ridiculously silly. And that to me is like, we didn't learn that lesson from the live action movie, because man, the bending is way too practical. Like, when you see the earthbenders in the original, it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. You can't create any of that amazing drama, you know, like that forcefulness that you get from the animated series. I don't know. I've already taken us off on way too much of an intense tangent.
Yeah,
no, I'm with you. As much as I like what they're trying to do, I'm not really in love with the final product. I feel like the parts of this are really good, and I don't think the parts combined make a good whole. You know, like when you say something is like better than the sum of its parts, I feel this is not as good as the sum of its parts.
Its parts. I think that it kind of falls, to a certain point, it kind of falls apart regardless of whichever way you look at it. It was a hard start for me. It was, I had the shows with me sitting on my tablet the whole time, and I didn't start watching it till the last leg of my entire flight, because I just, when I started watching in the beginning, I saw it and I'm like, this is not going to be that good. And I'm like, let me watch something else. Maybe something else is more entertaining. And then I ran out of stuff to watch. And I think it was an inevitable solution. And as every time I started, I would fall asleep, wake up, the whole jet lag was kind of hitting me pretty bad.
I feel like that's telling, dude.
Absolutely, it kind of is. Yeah, it wasn't engaging enough to keep me awake. It was weird. And I felt bad. Josh was sitting behind me. So on the flight back, we connected again in Newark. He and I were on different paths. I took a different flight path because I just decided I wanted to go through Portugal because that was the way to come back. Now, I promised my wife last year when I was at MWC, I passed through Portugal as well. So Portugal has some are known for some really good sardines, I guess. I didn't realize that until I passed it.
All right.
So I had mentioned it to her last year, and then she told me, like, hey, why didn't you get me some? I'm like, I didn't think you wanted me to buy sardines from it. Like, you know, it's like these are international, you know, whatever. So this time, with the opportunity to try to get a better seat on the flight back, because flights out of Barcelona after the show or during the show, especially 2 days in, are the worst because everybody starts leaving. There's that mass migration. Yeah. So they were all packed out of Barcelona. But anyways, long story is, I passed by, I met up with him there, and like he enjoyed the sleep. He slept pretty well. I could not sleep. I was just on and off again, watching Airbender and falling asleep again. Every time I turned it on, I fell back asleep. So it was a good show. Like I said, I watched four episodes.
It was like, TK
I probably should start up again from the beginning.
Avatar The Last Airbender. Better than NyQuil.
Yeah. If you want to sleep on a plane. No. Honestly, for me, it was more about, I did not feel a connection to the way the story was being told. The animation, the choreography that was done in there, the character, again, great actors. I'm not trying to take away anything right. from there, but even when they were trying to do, you know, she was trying to water bend to try to grab a ball of water. Mm-hmm. The ball comes out spherical. Like she's struggling with trying to grasp that concept. But as it comes right. out from the water, it comes out as a perfect sphere. It just throws me off. Like if you're struggling, the water and should it, be struggling with
and
you.
And it's not like you didn't have 10 hours of potential storyboards that you yeah. could have drawn from with no. the original animated series. You could have used them as your storyboards. I'm going to get
lost in storage.
All over again. But we've got a number of folks in here. We didn't do our little shout outs. We've got Ike's Tech Talk. He also says he enjoyed it better than M. Night Shyamalan's, but it was meh at best. Keep watching just to see the overall outcome, but it was okay. Simon says, Hypno, I've never seen anything Airbender related, but I like both of your passion for it. So Simon, I would add the original. It is a kids show. It was classic, like, you know, sort of a premier Nickelodeon animation, but it's a really lovely fantasy world. And it draws from so many brilliant inspirations. Like you can see those little kernels, like Miyazaki's work. You can see, that classic anime feel to it. But then also very traditional hero storytelling. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion is maybe one of the most heartfelt, epic battle, hero journey, boy becomes a man kinds of stories that I think I've seen in many, many years. I'm trying to speak very vaguely around because I don't want to spoil the end of one of my favorite TV shows.
I think it's a great show.
But it really is. I would absolutely put it on a list to check it out. We got Tech for Your Knees. We got Sebastian Lobos. We got Ghost Starscream. Steve Pogue, unfortunately, has not been enjoying his OnePlus Buds 3. They don't fit his ears, and so he's returning them to spring for a OnePlus Watch 2. Steve, you will always, from both of us, completely acknowledge every ear is funky and different.
Yeah. Yeah,
and finding a good fit is like 90% of the battle. There is no more comfortable or less comfortable earbud. A company doesn't go out of their way to make a less comfortable earbud. It's that they're trying to design for a broad audience, and that means they're going to get it wrong for at least 60% of the population.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I would have said maybe you should try the Plus, but the Plus is the Pro 2.
Yeah, the casing is too similar. If the Buds 3 aren't fitting you, go find something else. Like, it is so precious that you get the right fit. Exactly. We've got Farhan, Vazikos, Sajid, Ron Guido, Bionic Scoop, and we even had Michael Peppertech pop in just to say he was going to bed. So hopefully Michael Peppertech is dreaming of really, really fun tech. I think we need to jam because I diverted us an entire half hour on video games Airbender.
It was surprisingly before we drop off the video game thing, and we're going to circle it back into MWC. For me, it was truly one of the more exciting things to see at the show. And I can't, we've talked about it a little bit where the the techno game, you know, the techno on the go game game controller.
Yeah.
System.
I didn't try and pull up anything. Let me get like a web browser going so we can look at some of this stuff while we're talking about
So for me, what really surprised me with it is the simplicity of what this is trying to do, the performance that it has, the fact that it has replaceable batteries. It's rated for obviously an extended amount of time, but we're waiting obviously on release date and see when it's going to be available. But from the demo that we got, again, running Cyberpunk 2077 natively on device, smooth, super buttery smooth at 60 frames per second. It was absolutely fantastic. Obviously, again, would have wished it was higher, but it, for what they're offering us with the solution that they're giving us, it really is refreshing to see what Tecno's trying to do. Because they had quite a few demos that a couple mm-hmm. of them I actually missed. Actually, I didn't kind of miss. I saw them, but by the time I wanted to get access to them, there were so many people there and I was running out of time. It is very hard to say that 2 full days of MWC is not enough. It's not enough, absolutely not enough to do anything and everything that you want to do. You're barely touching it on a little bit of the conversation of what's going on. So the Pocket Go is what we were talking about here. As you can see, it's a two-piece solution, a controller that houses all of the processing power, the battery, of course, and everything. And for all intents and purposes, the glasses are pretty much like what we used to say before, right? The AR glasses that we have in there, like the Rokits, the X-Reels, all of them, obviously without the brain. The brain is in that controller, and it just worked. Like, I was originally expecting it to be like a little bit stuttery or whatever, but like, no, you get used to the mechanics. There's enough triggers and buttons configurations to be able to get everything customized. It was really nice. We didn't get a chance to see the UI as far as the launchers and all of that. They had us just mm-hmm. basically encapsulated in one game to demonstrate that it can run the actual.
Like, the idea is so clever. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I love my Steam Deck, and I'm still fighting that urge to flip it and get a Steam Deck OLED. The display isn't one of, like, the amazing things about the Steam Deck. And I'm still, even when I'm gaming at home, I will very regularly pop in my X-Reels.
Yeah.
Because that display is so much better. So why not try? Why not try a gaming peripheral like this? Or I'm sorry, a gaming console like this, where you can cut costs on an okay display and instead just work on something like these Birdbath optics. Because this looks a lot like the visor and the design from the original TCL Nextwear G.
It gave me a little bit of that.
It looks simpler.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some collaboration between the two. Being like, because obviously TCL and Rainio are working on multiple generational upgrades of different things now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what I will say is it didn't feel... it was clear enough. It was light enough to run everything we wanted, and it did not get warm because, again, most of the processing is done off device. There's no battery sitting on the glass, so I enjoyed that part. And I think their implementation has a very good. I mean, for the lack of a better term, that's how I'm playing the games right now. Anyways,
I know.
Unless I'm sitting at home and I really need to look at the Legion Guilds play,
or save the space.
Yeah, we're doing the exact same thing. We're just now it's built in so that we save that space and they're able to give us replacement batteries. That was the other kind of kicker in there that I think a lot of people didn't do. You can just slide it open, pick out the battery, put a new one in there, and it comes with I think one. And when it does go on sale, they'll let you buy an extra one with it, so you can have an extra pack. It's
God,
nice,
man.
Long flights.
I'm hoping so bad that replaceable or swappable battery trend starts making its way. I want to see that back in laptops. I'd love to see that in a gaming handheld or a gaming mini console, something like that. It's just
swappable batteries. So I think it's an older. It's a classic that we lost a long, long time ago. Gaming systems started losing them, and everything becomes hardwired. Lenovo did showcase to me a ThinkPad where they have replaceable parts now, and one of them is the battery. The battery actually is two screws connected to the motherboard with a connector, and that's it.
I've been working. Like, I still haven't been able to publish the video where I'm still chatting with GTAC, but it for such a massive, rugged, chunky laptop, it is so nice having these little panels that pop open and then you just hot swap. The computer stays on mm-hmm. while you pull one or the other battery cells and then you just keep working. Like if I were working on anything out in the field, that is so much more important than like fast charging. No. I've got the battery cells.
Because
you go from 0 to 100 immediately.
In 2 shakes of a lamb's tail, which I now am using twice this week. Never did I ever say that. But no, I mean, absolutely. I think it's way worth more the ability of hot swapping and changing on the go. And it's something that I think a lot of us would appreciate more as opposed to having like, oh, my battery's drying. Where can I go get a charger to plug my phone into? Yeah. And now you're running the phone and a charger with a wire connected with them and having to make sure you're not damaging.
And also for the price of picking up a spare battery or two, mm-hmm. that means you're cycling your batteries. So you get even more longevity out of every battery cell.
Exactly. Because
you're not constantly putting all of the load, charging and discharging on one battery every single day. Anyway, sorry, that's not what we've got. So much other really cool stuff to talk about. One soapboxing about repairability again.
Battery. No, no, but it was a big thing from Lenovo talking about the right to repair. I mean, this is the first time I've sat down with a company that that has that in their mindset, especially for ThinkPad, for deployable PCs, and even if they're consumer ready, or even
you know their business divisions are absolutely getting that as a request. Sense
for that. Yeah, no, no. And then, of course, to kind of cap it off, I got a chance to see that beautiful, transparent display. That was actually also an interesting concept.
What did you think? I'm curious.
I think it's a great proof of concept that has a definite wow moment within the first time seeing it. You are going to say like, wow, like this makes sense.
Now, did you ever do any of the Samsung or LG display tours?
I did one on this trip. Yes.
Okay. Seeing transparent OLEDs since 2012, I think is the first time I saw one. It was for a vending machine concept where it had all of this animated OLED, activity going on. And then you would just walk up and touch the front facade, where all the snacks are. And then all of this stuff would morph around. The UI would morph around what you chose. And that's how you would pay for things. And you just tap a little sensor on the side, but there wasn't every vending machine has that side where all of the buttons and payment options and stuff are. And here, they just had a little puck. Mm-hmm. So I keep wondering, because we see it in science fiction all the time, that the future is going to be a transparent phone or something like that. I don't get it for consumers. It makes so much sense to me in industrial. Uh-huh. Like this could be the future of assisted driving, where you have some smart, data at eye level. Instead of just a static heads up display, it's giving you richer but more fighter pilot style information. It makes so much sense for military applications. There are so many things. Transparent OLED. The technology is so practical. It makes so much sense until I see it on a laptop, and I wonder who is cool with someone being able to see everything you do on a laptop.
So part of the conversation I had with Lenovo, I'm not going to lie that there was the whole wow moment. Like I said, there was definitely you could have recorded it on my face with the wow. There's very few pieces of tech I got a chance to see on during the event that gave me that wow factor. And I'm not going to deny the fact that obviously, again, as you said, it's not 100% brand new, but the intention of the laptop, at least as I understand it from them, isn't necessarily to be where, there's that privacy. It's more about that connectivity and sharing. They want to basically make it interpersonal, interconnected. Sorry, before I let this thing go too far here. Here is the Genshin sweater.
Nerd.
So they gave them away at the Watch 2 event. It was right before they went with the Genshin phone. So I got the sweater, and of course now I have the phone, because that's how you do it, right? You get the sweater with the phone. I'll say this: I don't think if it doesn't have any options for privacy, some kind of a function where it stops it from becoming transparent. You don't want to open up your bank account. You don't want to open up your personal email and have everybody able to see messages and whatever. Absolutely. From a privacy standpoint, this is not it. This is absolutely the opposite direction.
I know people make fun of me and they immediately think I'm talking about porn, but when I'm on an air, when I'm on a flight,
I mean, I'm not going to, I'm just like, I tried to I said privacy. You could do whatever you want in your own private
time. I'm on an airplane and you go through the list of movies that are on the little heads up screens,
yes,
and they have all these rated R films, horror films, dramas.
Quite a few of them have a lot of nudity in them. Yep, I know.
Or gore. And it really hit. I was watching a scary movie and a kid on the aisle next to me is eyes the size of saucers, staring at my screen. And that I can't watch horror films on a plane anymore until I got my fancy heads up display, AR glasses. XR, they're MR, just portable face displays.
Yeah, exactly.
But I got those. And now if I want to, like, throw a really freaky, scary movie on there, I'm good.
You don't jump out of your chair, we're fine.
Oh, yeah, I'm twitching all over the place. And this guy's having a seizure. But I'm not worried about some little kid looking over my shoulder to see something horrifically inappropriate for their age. And that again, that's the, you're talking about privacy and all this other stuff. I mean, like, even just something mundane, like what content you're watching, to me, I'm not saying, like, I don't want people to know I'm watching a scary movie, but also it's like it's none of their business. And that's, to me, has always been the failure of this sci-fi concept.
Yeah.
That someday our phones will just show off everything, or, you know, we have these AR screens. So anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, like, besmirch the tech, because I think the tech is incredible. But for me, it's always, when we consider this a consumer application, I'm at a loss as to why I would want to spend money on that versus just a traditional laptop shell. That to me is always, like, I haven't found in my brain.
Yeah, I don't think it's so. First thing first, it's a lot bigger than it looked like in pictures. It's a lot bigger, more like a 17 inch laptop, not a 14, not a 16. It's a 17. Fair. It's a big guy. The configuration that we saw was purely proof of concept, because they didn't even have they didn't think about where to put, let's say, if there was going to be a webcam, right? Let's say if you wanted to do conference calls or meet with somebody, there's nothing. There's no hardware there. The only camera that was present was intended to demonstrate the reason why they feel like this technology would make sense to consumers. And maybe not necessarily consumers as in the general average Joe kind of thing, but more like artists or people that need to use an augmented reality type of solution. The camera that they had was facing the back of the laptop, pointing away from the laptop, so that technically it's almost like the laptop had an eye. So anything you put in front of it, behind the display. So where you're sitting in there, the laptop and keyboard is towards you. So anything beyond it, you can lay it on the table. And they were using that little fake flower pot. And the system can recognize it, and AI generate an interactive experience around that subject or set that object in the background. So that was the pure reason that they were doing it. And in the demo that I did on my video, you could see that little square in the image, and it was supposed to replicate, let's say, a butterfly or a hummingbird flying and landing on said plant.
Oh, cool.
Because it analyzed it and it was a plant. So the only way to interact with it would have been some type of a flying object, you know, obviously a flower. It's a flower, so it needs either, I assume the bee would have going to show up at some point, but yeah.
So you describing that already now, the first thing that I'd want to see is the refinement of that technology to give us better sort of waveguided wearable optics.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like they took the wearable and put it on the display. Like it's something would have made more sense on the heads up type of thing.
And in the way that I got, you know, sort of really excited, but obviously, like, HoloLens has very severe limitations on field of view, that if you can use that kind of screen or panel technology for a future headset and expand the field of view so that you don't have this kind of tunnel vision effect for the AR, that to me would be significantly more exciting. Like, that sounds like a Lenovo concept for this is how we get you to see through a lens or through a panel.
Yeah.
And we're not doing video pass through like Quest or Vision Pro. This is actually augmented reality, not mixed reality video pass through.
It's trying to augment the experience that passes through it. And like I said, the demo that they did, again, I think the hardware that we were looking at was absolutely not even remotely close to what it needed to be. But the glass display keyboard was also, they said that in the future iteration they were planning on allowing the bottom portion of the keyboard, the bottom portion of the laptop where the keyboard was typically hemmed, to be programmable so that you can move the keyboard up and bring it down, add a secondary display above it, a little bit more functional, like for editing or even just for having a second display, like a little, I don't know, Twitter, Instagram ticker that you have on the bottom left or whatever. But the intention was it to be more customizable. It's just in the configuration they showed us, it was very much I think because they kept calling it like a proof of concept because it is functional. The mouse, the cursor, you can launch videos, you can open up applications, you can read things from both sides, although not very clearly on the backside. If you're looking from the outside in, it loses some of the brightness and the shimmer of what the color.
I have to believe that.
Because the OLEDs are pointing.
They're focused.
Pointing in the wrong direction. So you're looking, it's like the backside of a transparent paper. But it definitely is legible.
It's like needlepoint. You can see all the back stitching, and it's like, just doesn't look as good. So
that's
weird.
Where you did the crochet hook to the upper lip.
Okay. So the pixels are all woven together.
I will say this. It was a surprise that I actually was going to be getting that, because originally I had scheduled an appointment for a booth tour with the Lenovo guys. That little clamshell Moto phone watch, it was on the show floor, and it was such a popular demo area that it was always packed. And I missed on going and doing the Saturday, Sunday pre-briefings because, as you know, I went to MWC this year with Xiaomi for the 14 series launch, as you know, we both have got a chance to play around with. And unfortunately, Saturday, Sunday were fully booked. Yes, it is absolutely, it is honestly,
it's such a cute little phone.
It is absolutely, but it's still a powerful little guy. I'll say this. I said in my video, don't let the small size fool you.
I want you to wrap up Lenovo, and I think we should then switch to Xiaomi, because I think we're both very, very pleased with this. But I'm sorry, I keep tangenting us into other directions.
It is the story of our life. No, the device looks really nice. It definitely was more designed to show us the bending functionality and how it would look. They had a couple of demos in there, a couple of units in there. But unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to spend time with it. And before I knew it, time was done and I was done and I was gone. So, but we got a chance to see a lot from Lenovo and Moto. They did a lot of cool things. And I really appreciate them letting me get that personal time with their laptop, as opposed to having it on the show floor where it's going to be just so much people. And we would not have had that conversation. And they are looking at privacy to it, which is essentially some type of either privacy panel or something that allows them to make it more.
You know, we do kind of have to make fun of them if they go through all of this process
to make it transparent,
oh, but if you need privacy, you just put a back on it like a regular laptop.
It was just
problem solved.
It is absolute. Like I said, this could be a purely a gateway into another medium, but the technology demonstrated.
DTNL and Simon in our chat are talking about like AR applications and stuff like that. And I'm
they have
kind
glasses
of with
already.
You
this
there.
Is not yet. They've already had the technology, but they're just not to this level.
What I mean is like this to me. If we're trying to figure out an optical system.
Yeah.
That is open view, like a regular pair of glasses, but can overlay information on top of that. I think this is a great proof of concept. That, to me, makes total sense.
Yeah.
This is not intended to be a consumer-facing or consumer-release product. This is a test bed for future applications and how you can interact with data in your environment. And eventually, we'll miniaturize it.
Sorry, yes, no, totally with you.
Are you okay? Do you need to get like some antihistamines or something? It just sounded like you had some real irritation.
Vision Pro, no.
Yeah, it's coming through loud and clear. That's tough.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no. Proof of concept. So I'm with you.
So everyone was covering the show with 3D video through their Vision Pros, right?
That
was.
So I'll say this.
I think it's called 3D video. That's what it's called. 3D video.
Oh, it's beyond me, man. That type of tech, I don't do that tech. You know me. 3D is just not me. I'm barely doing okay in 2D.
No. I'm pretty sure Apple was like, it's our mixed reality headset. What does the 3D video? And I thought that was very strange that they would use broadly accessible terms that the industry had already sort of decided on instead of coming up with ridiculous proprietary brand names for technology that already exists. It's just kind of funny that Apple finally got on board.
Years from now, Juan, when we look at this point in time, Apple would have basically cornered the market on this term. So we should just start appreciating what they're doing. Also understanding that Tim Cook took a price cut this year. So he's obviously not making more than 63 million. So let's
that
just
is
let things go.
So cash money of him. Yeah. I would like to switch over. I'm not going to spend time talking about Vision Pro, and I didn't expect to see many people sporting them.
I did not see a single one. Although I did hear of a few incidences, unfortunately, where people did not. They did get robbed. So it was not a fully untouched.
I don't want to make fun of stuff like that. We've had too many friends have issues and stuff like that. And regardless of how I feel about Apple's marketing department, that has nothing to do with someone
I think that was the number one deterrent for people. Like I knew a few of our friends that brought their devices with them, but they didn't bring it to the show floor, which I'm very glad that was a thing. But let's shift over to our 14s and we'll talk about the fact that you got the better color.
how impressive. I got to play with the little Xiaomi 13 last year, and it was a good phone. It was a perfectly competitive Galaxy S23 kind of device.
Yeah.
I was not expecting the update from Xiaomi 13 to Xiaomi 14 to be as substantial as it has proven to be. And I am shocked to see how many situations this thing is going toe-to-toe directly against a Galaxy S24 Ultra. The Ultra is still the better phone.
Yeah.
But it's the better phone at like $300 more, depending on region and exchange rate and currencies and all that stuff. And this is the little. This isn't the Xiaomi 14 Pro. This is the Xiaomi 14.
Yeah.
And it is surprisingly capable at going head-to-head against the best phone that Samsung makes.
It's hard for me to explain the way Xiaomi's been.
They have been so aggressive,
very aggressive, and their collaboration so with Leica has been like every time he comes out, it's even more and more and more hands-on, and you can actually see the collaboration go more beyond a filter or color type of approach to it. They're literally were part of the conversation in designing how the optics are put in here with the custom lens that we have. The Leica Authentic is true to life with a ridiculous color calibration option. If you really want to punch it up, you can jump into there's two levels of punching. You can go straight with vibrant, and you can go straight with vibrant and AI, and then go even more if you want to just, again, rainbow color puke all over the place here.
And I turn it all off because
And you turn all of that off, but you like, I took a few pictures when we were, okay, so in Barcelona, we went to a lot of dinners, and there was a lot of obviously media and stuff like that, but you could take pictures of the food. And you can see when it starts to get processed into just too much color, like everything is pushed up. And then you take the actual image the way it's supposed to be, and you look at it, and you're like, this could have been put side by side. You would not be able to tell which one is which. It was that accurate. And the camera system is super flexible. You have so many different options built into it. But also the big fact, obviously, like I said before, I love the option of director mode. If you have, let's say, a Xiaomi tablet or any other Xiaomi device that has HyperOS, enables you to be, especially that single content creator, you set the camera up, you get the framing done right, you step away with your phone, you can stop and start, you can do audio input, just so many things. And again, it's not super tiny, but like it's a tiny little phone. I'm used to so much bigger phones, but this is definitely really nice. And although the 14 didn't make it, I'm still happy we have the 14. Sorry, the Pro didn't make it. The 14
Pro. So the I kind of like that they did that this year. That the Ultra is the one that was getting the international release.
I'm very happy
with
that too.
The Pro is the one that's sticking in China. I'll be very curious to see if Vivo maybe tries to compete with them. That's part of another conversation.
It's been some time. We're still waiting on that Pro Plus.
We'll see what a Pro Plus might do. But considering this is just a hair taller than a Galaxy S24 or an iPhone 15, and it is pricier for being the little one. In most regions, I think this is actually going to be closer fight with an S24 Plus, around 1,000 euro, depending on where you are.
So this is, again, this goes back to the fact that we don't have a Pro, right? So last year's approach was a little bit different. They went 13, 13 Pro. And
the 13 was cheaper. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that was, but it was also a different experience. The 13 didn't get the same benefits as the Pro. So this is where like you felt like, okay, I understand that line where you're drawing the line saying that these are Pro features and these are not. This year, you felt more like we kind of got the Pro, but we didn't get the Pro body size. And you know, again, we didn't go with the 1-inch sensor. You could see the changes, but it's definitely a much more substantial change than what we were expecting from the non-Pro model.
And so if we're talking pricing, then you would want to put it up against a Galaxy S24 Plus. If we're talking size, you're paying more, but you put it up against a Galaxy S24. But so much of the tech in here can compete. Like, so when I say things like the camera performance, the Ultra is going to work, it is going to win on having a longer telephoto zoom.
Yeah.
You've got four sensors versus three. Okay, so the fourth sensor on the Samsung, is that really good, that new larger telephoto mm-hmm. sensor. Great. You're going to pay $300 for that. The main camera sensor in the S24 and S24 Plus is a smaller 1/1.56 inch yes. type sensor. Mm-hmm. The main sensor in this is a new 1/1.3, which outpaces the S24 Ultra. I don't know, like you, because you're rocking the S24 Ultra right now, right? Like,
right now, yeah. No, I it's so hard to say this, but like I had it with me, but I rarely pulled it out. It was really, basically the entire show for me landed between these two devices.
No, I just mean like, oh yeah, yeah. I mean in the Honor, we're definitely gonna talk about that too.
I didn't find
just in terms of photography.
Yeah,
OmniVision this year has come out of nowhere. They are currently delivering the absolute best telephoto sensor I've ever seen. It's on the Vivo X100 Pro.
Yes.
This new 1/1.3 inch type sensor, have you tried checking out, this is so nerdy and mm-hmm. it's going to apply to so few people, except for those of you who really do care about like image composition, the quality of an image that comes off of a sensor. Have you tried just manually adjusting the ISO?
Typically, that's what I do with a pre-staged image. Yeah, it's like set up the ISO and even the focus when I'm
sure. But I mean, like, I actually looked at what the Xiaomi 14 does when you do that.
Are we talking about high level ISOs, or are we talking about just a cap
on ISO mm-hmm. for any sensor under a 1-inch type sensor?
Okay,
there is no phone with a smaller than 1-inch type sensor that has peaked above ISO 4000. ISO 4000 is the peak on the Galaxy S24 Ultra, and you can only get that peak if you're shooting in auto mode. It will auto boost to ISO 4000, but if you try to manually control it, it drops you down to ISO 3200. I feel you're looking at the ISO range on the Xiaomi now, and what does it do?
I'm able to go all the way to 12,800. That is crazy.
It goes four stops higher
and it drops
any
on its lowest. Yeah.
Other. So when we put this up against the new Sony LYT sensors, Sony's light sensors do have a light gathering advantage per ISO. Mm-hmm. So if I put this up against the OnePlus 12, the OnePlus 12 at ISO 3200 looks pretty similar to the Xiaomi at ISO 6400. So I think Sony sensor is a higher quality in that ISO range, but then I can go another stop.
You can go. So just because obviously since I have both of them sitting in front of me, the Magic 6 Pro can go up to 6,000 and that's the maximum ISO level that it'll go to. And yeah, you're right. This thing is crazy.
12,800.
I did not try to
push it that high. The ISO range is crazy expanded over what over what any other phone get. And I have no idea where OmniVision came from with this sensor. This is completely new to me in seeing that happen. Usually you reserve that kind of extended ISO range when you can go up a sensor size, your mm-hmm. pixel, your photo sites get bigger, and it helps rein in the issues with noise. It's why you go from APS-C camera bodies to full-frame camera bodies. It's just the physics of all of this. So whatever trick they're pulling to give us an extended ISO range is kind of a big deal. It's a multiple stop advantage over Samsung's most expensive phone and their top premium ISO cell sensor in the Galaxy S24 Ultra. I did a photo comparison. I was just like walking around at night and like, wait a minute, it's doing things that a phone like this shouldn't be able to do. And it was outpacing my OnePlus 12, which is also like, I know it has an OmniVision. This shouldn't happen. This should not be outpacing what I can do with a Sony. And then I got to the end of this and you're like, holy cow, there is stuff in here that we've only seen on 1-inch sensors before. Xiaomi 14. I'm gobsmacked.
Which begs the conversation to be said that they Like they had a lot of Xiaomi 14 Ultra sitting on the show floor, and a lot of them were global units. And but they also did bring in the China only ceramic back color, the ones that they had in there, and then they had the 14 Pro also on titanium one that they had it in there as well. It is absolutely a refreshing approach to it. I just, part of me, like when I was using it. So here's my thing. The physical size of the device is primarily what gave me the limitation of me feeling like I'm connecting with it as I typically would connect with a smartphone. Like the Pro for me last year did hit it out of the park right away because it just felt exactly the way I wanted. This is definitely a very much flat surface, flat back, but flat display as well experience that just does so much. Like I said, because when you look at a small phone, you always expect compromises. You always expect something to make it fit in a smaller body, kind of like how Sony used to do with the Xperia, the 5 series, as opposed to the 1 series. But they didn't skimp on anything. If anything, I'll probably say is this, maybe I wish the fingerprint sensor was a little bit higher, but that's just me. Otherwise,
And even when I'm looking at things like, oh, I kind of wish this was like that. And then you just get something silly like, the new placement on the IR blaster is genius. Have you tried firing up the IR blaster?
Yeah.
Because it's not on the top of the phone anymore.
No, that's the thing.
There's so no hole. It's on the back by the camera module.
That's what I'm trying to say. Most people would not have noticed that. Like when I first did this, when I was doing unboxing it before I left it for Barcelona,
it's like, oh, I guess I got rid of the IR blaster. Yeah, what a bummer. Like,
nope, you had to just look a little bit to the left. Yeah. And then you could see there's a purpose for the design that they have on the side. It's so good. Like a purposely designed device. It just, again, for me, from a standpoint of what it offers. So for me, just also, I married it with a really nice wallpaper. We were there.
Aww,
I got Goku with the spirit bomb going. Yeah, and I'm sure Sony is not focusing heavily on it, but yeah, it was a good. HyperOS on this runs really nice. They talked about also the fact that HyperOS is going to be coming to way more devices. If you have, even all the way to the Mi 11 Ultra, which I know Jermaine was very happy to. Actually, I still have my Mi 11 Ultra somewhere. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be very, very happy with that as well. Because it's sad to see that they went away from that technology of having that external display in the back. But I'm loving where the technology is coming in. And from my experience, if nothing else, and I know you like this one as well, 4K 120 is in the native app. It is not hidden in a pro mode that you have to go dig for. Which, again, not me trying to point at anything, but like Samsung gave us a feature that they make it, you have to jump through.
I had to text you like, hey, like, I'm borrowing this S24 Ultra. I thought it had 4K 120.
You're like,
it's in a dumb other mode.
You gotta go look. No, yeah. And no, this one was really nice. I shot with it. I transferred my content off of it. It was a refreshing feeling to be able to use Nearby Share. Obviously, it's faster if you're using Xiaomi, the Mi Share functionality, if you're going from Xiaomi to Xiaomi. But even on the show floor, with all the bombardment of all the tech and everything, I was still able to transfer my content over on Nearby Share on this. So to me, it was like, it just made my 13 Ultra feel a little bit less of a unique. But I had that with me too. I was shooting with it. I brought it with me. I didn't bring the grip purely because of the, the phone was going to go in and out of my pocket all day long, and I wasn't going to be able to carry it in my hand. So for me, the grip becomes more of a liability or potential damage issue. So I felt like, okay, I'm going to go with that. But they did show us their new grip, which not only has a built-in battery, the locking mechanism is much stronger, also has a zoom range. So now we're able to use it to zoom in and zoom out. And of course, the shutter button, press to focus and then take the picture there. So it was actually nice. We'll see how much that costs. If I don't know, I'm debating if I want to basically, like, it's hard. Like, we can't trade in devices into these things. These things you have to buy full out, you know. So it is available. You're able to pick up.
We can't really sell them either.
It's hard to sell once you get it because again, unless it's during the time when it's really hot, like where everybody's looking for it. But that's the time you're going to be using it anyways. It kind of like there's a reason why the Mi 11 Ultra is still with me. I don't feel like it's a device that I think anybody would even be looking for. Right?
Same. I mean, like, I'm also holding on to it because I think I want to do a bit of a revisit. Mm-hmm. But the same reason, like, I can't really move my Xiaomi 12S Ultra. And I'm not using it that often because I have the 13 Ultra, and now I've also been mixing in. Like, I've started to try and put tags on my videos for what camera shot B-roll. Mm-hmm. And lately, it's basically I've just been using my Vivo X100 Pro tag for all my videos.
I am surprised. I do not know why you're.
I kind of want to go back before the Pixel 9 comes out and just say, hey, like, here's this really great Pixel 8 Pro.
Yeah.
And almost 2 years before it, we had the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. You know, we're still not catching up to what was on
the main
this
players
12S
aren't
Ultra.
Even trying to hit a level of photography in that manner at all. Like
not
to them, it's
close.
More about. Like, I'll say this, the update that they pushed out last week for Samsung did somewhat improve the experience on it. I'm not going to say it's like it made it.
Okay.
It didn't win me over in the sense of where I felt like, you know, the X100 Pro wasn't doing well. Like literally the X100 Pro right now is a competition for me with the Find X7 Ultra. Between the two of them, it's a hard tie for me because it's really hard for me to explain. It's purposely built for specific things. If I want to take photography, I want to be able to just go take snaps and everything and take general video, I feel like the Find X7 Ultra will do really, really good. If I'm just using it for the video part all the time, I find that the auto-focusing on the X100 Pro does much better. The colors do come out much, much better. There's not as much of a concern. But that could also be just a few more updates on the 7 Ultra that may also kind of make it catch up. The 14 Ultra for me right now, from what I've seen on the show floor, with the zoom range that I get in there, the color representation, again, it was a very well-lit experience. We're not talking low light. Mm-hmm. It looked very promising. And nice. All of the bells and whistles that we were expecting before. So Xiaomi did for us during the event a little a demo. They took us off site. Obviously, this was the Saturday and Sunday thing. We did a little bit of experiment there. And they shot a scene, a specific scene. Like they had a studio set up where they had like obviously lighting and all of that. And they kept shooting the scene in multiple configurations on the camera. There's the standard video mode of 4K60. Then they had to go into basically log mode when they were shooting, log. But they had a dedicated coloring artist that was actually sitting on stage off camera. As soon as the director was done shooting the content, he would send it over and he would color correct it there. And he was talking about Rec 709, Rec 2020, and I forgot what was the other one. The third color option that they were using. But either way, the images that we're getting out of the video off this device, the 14 Ultra, were crazy good. Like, seriously crazy. Like, the focus peaking, they were talking about.
The iPhone has log video now, so it's pretty much game over, TK.
I heard...
Apple invented log.
But the sad thing is I heard a few people... Like I didn't catch
saying,
the faces.
Saying crap like that?
Saying like the iPhone has been like, oh my God, are you on this trip?
And also like you mean like the LG V30 had log video? Good job.
Man. No.
You're awesome. I would just like to interrupt us because I would like to switch gears and we've had some chatter about your Magic, the Magic 6 Pro.
Yeah.
As a transition, I just fired up my 12S Ultra. And it has the HyperOS update ready to install. I'm gonna go ahead and start running this.
Got their updates much faster than their timeline.
The internationals definitely, for sure.
I'll say this. Yeah, we both got the HyperOS on the 13 Ultra on our 13 Ultras quite a bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even brand new. And the tab that I got also got it. I need to fire the 13 up and see if the 13 got it as well. Because the
one I'm curious about too is the 13T. See that one did. So I'm gonna play with those two.
That should be pretty soon as well. But
I don't think Xiaomi's gonna be too precious with this update because HyperOS doesn't seem like it's fundamentally a different environment than MIUI was.
No,
I know there's a lot of extra
frame rate. Yeah, it's the design of the toggles and just I think overall, if you're used to MIUI, you're going to be very much used to and into it. But I think it's a synchronization of it, terminology, like the Watch S3 that they launched as well. They're no longer calling it RTOS running; it's running HyperOS. So it's just more of a HyperOS is everything. They gave us a heads up. They're like, we're going to say the word HyperOS quite a bit on this event. So
Magic 6 Pro, where are we at? Because I'm very surprised by their price point. I thought they would probably climb a little higher.
Oh,
okay. Just because they are premium devices.
They are.
They are competing on because what is it? It's around €800, €850, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I think on the base model. Yeah. Hold on. Let me pull up the site.
So, but I mean, like, we're talking about a phone that is kind of purpose built to beat a Galaxy S24, but costs about €100 less than a Galaxy S24.
Plus, hands down. But I know what you mean. Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to bring up the site just to make sure. Because they didn't give me the price of the, at the time when we were doing all of our content, we didn't have the actual pricing, as we typically never get those.
Yeah.
Till after the show. And I think I just got lost there.
Actually, for some of our videos too, we kind of are guessing. Like, we'll publish the video and be like, well, I really think that this is, if it lands in the price performance that I think it will, it should be good against this. I was a little off on the Xiaomi 14. I thought the Xiaomi 14 was going to be a little bit less expensive than it turned out to be. But even with it being priced at a premium, I'm still absolutely loving that phone. Simon says Hypno saying £849 in the UK.
Yeah, so it's about 909 something. It's close to 1,000. I mean, it's realistically, if you think about it, it's not
right, but it doesn't officially hit that like an S24 Plus.
Exactly. It's not. Yeah, yeah. There's some purposely built, purposely stated functions in there. But what I'll say is, it has surprised me very much in the way it does image processing and in the. Like, I like the 5 Pro. I like the 4 Pro. We both got a chance to play with the 4 Pro, I think, a few years ago. The 5 Pro last year was really definitely hit it out of the park. But the from the feel, from the function, from the speed of performance, and I'll be honest with you, I've rendered and I've cut video on every single device that I was looking at. I'm talking about the 14. Mm-hmm. We're talking about that. And they're all running Gen 3s. We're not trying to run, like, you know, Dimensity versus what. No. I'm keeping them all in the same ballpark, sure. Same manufacturer, same SoC. Honor does not limit the function of this processor in any way, shape, or form. Like, when you go full bore, you're going full bore. And I'll say that Xiaomi still, to a certain point, is either throttling it or they're trying to manage it more.
Xiaomi still manages it, yeah.
They didn't used to, though. Remember back in the old days, Xiaomi used to be the guy that, like, hey, you want to run into a wall? Here's a car. Here's the key. Go. This is definitely managed, but... When I render video, when I cut video, when I edit things on the Magic, because I also like using it with the glasses. That was the other function that I loved about that. It's the video out in there, which is present. It just rendered fast. LumaFusion run beautifully on it.
Mm-hmm.
The gaming on this was much better managed. I feel like the cooling on it was definitely much better than what we've seen before. And I'm not going to try to knock, because obviously they're not in the same category per se, but the 14 definitely got a little bit warmer in some of the games I was playing, but I feel like it's something to do with the constraints of the physical size of it. And then,
it's too little to get heat out.
It has the better cooling, but you're starting, you need space for things. And I think the Magic 6 Pro for me right now, between the devices I got a chance to play with, I gravitated a lot more to it. And the images that were coming out of it were much better, even if I didn't turn on the AI mode function for it. I'll say that I did like more Leica Authentic on the Xiaomi 14. But if you just, from an all-round camera experience, if you're just not even using the Pro mode sections in there, it ran so nice. The front-facing camera was very good. We have an actual 3D time-of-flight sensor to do true face unlock, not image, just, you know, static image kind of solution. Stereo speakers that, and this may not be everybody's cup, that quad display curvature that we have in here, it is so good. There is a big...
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of.
I know, and I know. It's a pure, like, yes, I totally understand the benefit for flat displays. Again, we're running from a flat display on the 14 to a quad curve display on the 6 Pro. So for me, I think that was a big thing. It's mostly because it's a smooth transition on the display from the beginning, from the sides, from the bottom, from the top. You never end up hitting the screen protector that they put in there. But the zoom range that we got in there, the color, the HDR processing that it did outside, because quite a few areas where we were, there was a lot of bright lit sun above the subjects, and we're trying to take an image of that. So I tried to put enough image samples and video samples from my from the experience there. And then when we went to the museum in Barcelona, it was just so nice and low light. It was able to pull out all the details, the shadows.
Yeah.
There was a few images in there, and I don't even think I showed all of them. but like it was just like, oh my God, where is it? Oh, here. Like, so this one, and I'm pretty sure this is going to look really bad here. Let's see if we can get this here.
Oh wow, that's gruesome.
That is very much gruesome. Yes.
you got to warn a guy before you shove like a.
I'm sorry, I didn't think it was going to focus as much, but like then you get some of these things.
Oh, that's
like
a little less gruesome, yeah. But yeah, no, it's like that has because we did. Was it for the Magic Four?
Mm-hmm.
We went to the LA Museum of Natural History and we were taking pictures of dinosaur fossils with different phones. I think it was the Magic Four.
Yes.
But that's always been a strong suit for first Huawei and then Honor image processing. Like,
yes.
They've done that high contrast lighting look. It is not always accurate.
No.
But it is. It feels like what you remember it looking like. Yeah.
Yes. If you have to,
it feels like it.
When your brain fills in the gaps of how you remember the event, like, I used my the four. That's when we tested it out. But then on the five, I forgot what it was. But I think I was on a trip with the family to New York, and the images that I was able to pull out of the skyline from the clouds and everything in there were seriously the way I would remember those images, and they looked very. Yeah. Very much, again, it's HDR processing. We definitely, you're appreciating it there. But I think overall, the camera system is very well-rounded from what you get on the ultrawide, on the telephoto, and even on the main sensor on the back, which I felt like, again, where I lived 90% of my time. But it was just so good. And the only kind of thing that kind of got me is that we only got 4K 30 on the front, not 4K 60. And I felt like they could have just continued the whole relationship. But it's like, yeah, otherwise.
Just, at that point, you just throw the phone away.
Yeah.
It's like the most important camera on a phone is the dinky little camera that you use for taking your video calls.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's one of those solutions. Like they definitely did very, very nice. They did release also a Porsche design version of that, which I didn't get a chance to see, but they announced it there. The booth was as amazing as it was before, and it just, like I said, it just solidifies what Honor's been doing and why this is their top of the line.
Have you had a chance to fire up the desktop mode? Has anything changed there? Is that
I included a part of that as well in my video. The way I fired it up on this one, I connected it to a hub this time so that I'm trying to get it like more of a PC like experience. So I connected to my like 32 inch ultra wide monitor with a keyboard and mouse,
nice.
Connected to a hub. I went all fancy and shit, because the fun can do it. But that's how I fired up when I was starting editing, editing in it and using LumaFusion. I felt like that's the best solution way to do it. But very much the same. Unfortunately, not much of a change. Still struggles with Twitter. I don't know why Twitter seems to be a problem for Magic OS desktop.
Well, we shouldn't be using Twitter anymore. So the phone is basically telling you you're making a poor life choice by continuing.
And I think that's what it was. The decision was made. But same configuration, same toggles, multi-window, multi-operation. Still only plays one video feed at a time, but that's typical to Android. You can only play one video with audio at the same time. Because what I did is on my demo area is I had our podcast post on the top right on YouTube, I think from the previous week, because we didn't have one last week. And then I was trying to play a quick clip on Netflix just to show the playback. And I ended, it wouldn't play the audio, so I had to stop ours and switch over, but... Yeah, desktop mode works really nice. Projection mode, you can also play that wirelessly. Works really, really good. They don't have a Dex on PC or Ready for PC solution there. I don't think this is something that's on their end. But as I kind of mentioned it earlier in the week when we talked about it on your show, swipe down the notification is there. It's in here. Magic OS 8 will bring that function to any device that gets that supported. So if the 5 and the 4 series get it, it is a pleasure to see and a very welcome feature. I think for me, that was the biggest thing. Like, just simple things.
Just kind of cleaning up some of the old Huawei UI decisions that I don't think they need to hold to anymore.
No.
It's nice to see the brand sort of
I want to see more. Yeah, exactly. Because I feel like initially at Magic OS, when it first introduced, for the most part, it was pretty much a copy and copy and with minor tweaks here and there. But we want to start seeing them creating more functions, adding more features in there. And I'm glad that they're still continuing with the desktop mode on Android and Android 14. They're not, they're not skimping that experience. And I'm hopefully, we'll see some more improvements in the future. Maybe that again, leveraging.
I just feel like it's crazy to me that a brand like Honor doesn't come out with a part of their ad campaign saying, "This phone might be all the computer you need in your home."
Yeah.
Like Samsung gave up on that conversation. Moto doesn't really promote Ready 4. Like they talk about it. Oh, you can do wireless Ready 4 on our Flip now. And like, cool. But no one's ever really just sat down and said, hey, if you're doing most of your stuff out of a browser, if you're really living in your phone in these apps, this is all the computer you would really need.
Yeah.
And I think it would be so simple to make a part of your advertising that, and they're the last company that's still supporting this. It's Moto, Samsung, and Honor. So I just feel like it's a missed opportunity to really highlight, here is how we are different from an Apple, and no one really seems to want to talk about why they're different. They're all trying to say, here are all the ways that we're just like the iPhone. And you're like, then go buy an iPhone.
and I know that there's some comments also kind of posted on some of the videos. Their media player replicates the Dynamic Island so to the T.
Yeah.
That was about the only thing that would run it this way. If you're running it and you're playing music, the player icon, the player controls go around the camera's module. And I felt like it was just too much on the nose. Like, hey, Apple, we can copy it's, Dynamic Island.
It's a
like,
bit obvious. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's there. I'm not going to deny it. Again, they've been the Xiaomi 14 and the Magic 6 Pro. Both, I feel like they both had a lot of inspiration of iOS. I'm not going to say that exactly. Mm-hmm. There's very much an iOS inspiration theme going on. You could see that in the way the icons are done and all of that. But both ran, again, I think from an operating system, when I compare the two from an Gen 2 to an Gen 3, we definitely get more power when we go into gaming mode and just push it all the way on the Magic 6 Pro. And that is appreciated because we also have that larger battery, 5,600 milliampere battery with the faster charging, the wireless wire charge. There's a lot of things going on. And because this one's a little bit more petite, it's a smaller battery, 4,600.
Yeah.
Although it charges fast, but it's still, capacity wise. Speaking of which, I was kind of disappointed to see that the 14 Ultra is only going to be at 5,000. I wish they would have gone a little bit more. But if you use the camera,
to be called an Ultra, and especially for playing with the Vivo X100, getting a little bit of a battery nudge, I would have liked to see. I think that
generally, across the board, most devices did get a battery bump on the higher capacity side. Samsung stuck to 5,000.
Samsung.
No, Samsung. Well, no. Okay. So look, they are still to a certain point recovering from the Note 7. I don't know how long we're going to be recovering from the Note 7.
No, I'm not giving Samsung a pass from the Note 7. That was so long ago. If they couldn't have recovered by now, they should stop making phones. I think this is the current Samsung leadership who has been working so hard to rein in costs at the expense of pushing more aggressive boundaries. And we keep hearing these rumors out of the Samsung executives are saying, oh, we're really going to focus on being an innovator again. And it's like, they know that they're holding their products back. We saw the render for what could be the new Z Flip 6. If that's all they do for the Z Flip 6, you could miss it. Just skip it this year.
Yeah.
It looks so retread. I need Samsung to give me a device that has the best of every tech that they have access to. And that's not the S24 Ultra.
It needs to be an Ultra on everything. And I think that's the biggest. We are, to a certain point, spoiled because we had a chance to see other Ultras and other Pros that are competing neck and neck and beating that the Ultra that we're getting on our end.
Yeah.
But I don't know why.
Money, so, TK.
No, you know why. No, not
you
that
know
part.
Why.
I'm trying to find out is why are we still not seeing some of the like the Honors, the Xiaomis, the Vivos, and I mean OnePlus. I don't really blame them as much. I feel like OnePlus pretty much has a good strategy on their hand because I just saw earlier today that the Oppo Watch X came out, which is exactly like our watch, but it's the beige band, the one that matches my Find X Ultra. Now I need to figure out how to get that band. It's very much a solution to competition. We need better competition. We need better options in the U.S. market.
I don't think that any Chinese company is going to come here after our State Department tried to put Xiaomi on the entities list.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they tried to blacklist Xiaomi as being like a military industrial company selling trade secrets and stuff. And you're like, Xiaomi sued the United States government and got them to back off because that was total BS. So I don't think Oppo, I mean, they have a toehold in the United States thanks to OnePlus as a brand. Yeah. I don't think they're going to bring Oppo-branded products here. Xiaomi's given up on us. Honor isn't going to play ball because of the whole history and baggage with Huawei. We're burned. The United States is correctly being ignored by the rest of the world. Yeah. And also, what would it benefit them? Because you're going to get here, you're going to spend billions of dollars over years trying to build up an infrastructure and a relationship with consumers, but you then still have to play ball with United States carriers, and no one's gonna put up your phone anywhere near an iPhone. So any other company on the planet, they're either actively looking at walking away from the United States, or they just have no interest in trying to bring it here at all. Americans are too complacent in their lack of choice to try and convince them that they need to try other products. It's just so demoralizing. Because I do want to spend a minute talking about this little guy right here
that moved up. Yeah. No, sorry.
Yeah. It's just moving on up in the world. I'm holding up a Vivo V30 Pro. A cute little mid-ranger. I shouldn't say little. This is a big phone.
It is not.
It is not a little phone. Let me. Where's my Xiaomi? I just put it down on my desk, which means I instantly lost it. So this is sort big of guy. The height differential. Let me try and move.
Surprisingly lighter, though. Right? Like it feels lighter than the 14, but it's taller than the 14.
And even in this video, you can see it is. Thickness. Yeah. Not only thinner, but then also curved glass on both sides. So it's got that fine rail feel in your fingers that I feel LG deserves the credit for making that design first.
It is curved display TK approved. Let's just say that much. Yeah.
But I mean, it is demonstrably taller than a phone that used to be a medium-sized phone from several years ago.
And of course, the V30. I don't need that. Yeah, you won't be able to see it that way.
Or rely.
We get it.
So here it is. So TK is showing us this ring flash, this ring light that it's gotten larger than last year's V series phone. Yeah. And last year we gave out phone awards at the end of 2023. The V27 Pro was my selfie fashion phone. One of my top picks for that is sort of a singular phone category.
Yeah.
So much of what this phone is doing is giving you better lighting, a better fill light, so that your portraits and your sort of head and shoulder shots look a little richer. And a company's finally listened to us. There is no wasted camera sensor on the back of this phone. They don't have a dinky 2-megapixel macro waste of space. They've got proper 50-megapixel sensors on the ultra-wide, the main sensor, and the telephoto.
4K60 experience across the lenses it was
the main sensor on this. I don't think the lenses are as nice, but the main sensor is bigger than the main sensor on a Galaxy S24. And it is a properly badged Zeiss camera system. So it also comes with all of those like Zeiss AI color processing modes, Zeiss bokeh modes. So you can emulate old classic lenses in your portrait mode. You can do like, you know, the Zeiss like kind of anamorphic style bokeh balls and stuff like that. Everything here contributes to a surprisingly much more robust camera platform than the V series we got last year. The V series we got last year had that stupid macro sensor you should never use. The ultra wide was, I think, a 12 megapixel, but it was a smaller sensor. Mm-hmm. It was just all a waste. This properly steps us up where no piece of this hardware feels like it's tacked on there just for the appearance of having something you're supposed to have on the back of the phone. It is all useful now. Mm-hmm. I'm so impressed with what Vivo
I'm very
has done.
Well, I'm very pleased because this is the first time I got a chance to play with the V series. I've always been, historically, I've from you even, I've always borrowed the X series, right? The X70 Pro Plus. And then when we went to X90, it was also, you know, X90, it was always the X series for me. So it was very nice surprised when Vivo reached out and they're like, hey, would you like to check out our V series? And from a timing standpoint, it was just too close for me to be able to check out the V30. But I'm glad that they were nice enough to let me check out the V30 Pro. And again, took it with me on the trip. I think this is partially what I liked about this, the way I did the videos on these devices. I got a chance to show the experience of using these cameras while not just being in a hometown. And we were also going through such bad weather for a consistent amount of time, as we're going to be getting again starting tomorrow morning. But yeah, no, it's that little option to be able to customize the light on the back, and still have a dual tone LED flash if you want to use it.
Yeah,
it's just really nice. And then and of course that leaf, I want to call it the rose petal back, because it looks like it just like as if they basically dried the rose petals on the back of the glass.
Oh, see, I was thinking it would look like when you take like an impressionistic painting, when you take those hard like scraper brush techniques to oil paints. To me, this looks like a hard, like oil paint smear, an effect. Vivo is like, these are the companies, and especially in their mid rangers, these are the companies that are giving us the most creative backplates. Because last year for the V27, we had Hypercolor.
Okay,
so it was UV sensitive.
Was it the one? Yeah.
We so you would take it out in the sun, and it would totally change color.
Color changes in the back. Yeah.
I think they still have one back that does that. It is a color-changing back. I kind of wish I still had that one. But, I mean, again, it's silly. It's not adding a whole bunch to the price of a phone, and I wouldn't purchase a phone just because it changes color in the sun. But it was fun, holding on to it, and then you can see, your fingers, when they were blocking the sun. It's surprising.
The big part of what most of these devices need to do and what they are doing is making them unique and fun to look at. It's just the aesthetics on the back. Like even the design on the 14, you can see the ceramic back. It's reflective on the green one that we have, but the white one, at least I have. The white one is absolutely kick-ass. The black one was even more more on point. I like the green one, the jade color, but again, I feel like I had to have that phone carried with a chamois. Like I touch, wipe. But unfortunately, the case they gave us is not see-through, so you don't get to enjoy the color as much.
This
definitely needs a see-through case, kind of like I did here with the Magic 6 Pro. I had to pick up a case because there was no cases in the box for the Magic 6 Pro, but or charger. That's a new direction for Honor as well that they're going in with their
lame.
Incorrect. But the 14.
This again. Cool.
Yeah.
The Vivo clear plastic bumper, so we're not talking anything fancy or nice.
No,
but
let us
still
enjoy
see
the phone. Yeah,
the
phone is pretty. Let us see the phone and enjoy the colors.
It makes sense. And it did come in the box. And then also there was the 120 watt charger. For a mid ranger is in the box.
Well, okay,
so every little piece of this, someone complained in my video because it uses the same chip as the V27 Pro did. It's got the Dimensity 8200. It didn't change. Year over year. One of the things that they always brag about, it gets 10% more powerful for your applications. Well, guess what? A Dimensity 8200 is still ridiculous overkill for most people's daily smartphone needs. Absolutely. So they left that in place, and literally every component on the phone got better. The screen got a higher resolution. It's no longer 1080p, which on a screen size this big, I think that matters. I think it matters that it's a higher pixel density.
Exactly.
A Galaxy S24 does not have 50 megapixel high resolution modes for all of their camera sensors because only the main camera sensor is 50 MP.
Yep.
And this mid-ranger has high resolution camera high resolution output for all three sensors because
they didn't
all three are.
Exactly. They continued it all across the device.
Everything got better.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I take that back. Everything but the speakers. The speakers are still a little
speakers,
but they did get louder. So the quality isn't better.
Did I miss the fact that it has speakers? Because for me, it has a speaker. It's mono.
I thought it was stereo. Hold on.
I did an audio test for it. Yeah. Because that was the thing as I was going through the.
I'm almost positive this is stereo. Because it's got this wide trench above the camera bar, but maybe I'm wrong. Let's see.
No, it's okay. Play something classy.
I'm gonna play that really obnoxious jazz lick that I do for all of my tests that people hate, but I don't play other songs.
I don't know how to make it. I've heard it, but I can't replicate it. Okay.
No, I mean, you might be right. Maybe it is just like a loud chamber mono.
It's loud chamber mono, and it echoes through the body when you block it.
I think you might be right. I think it is actually like the phone is hollow enough.
It took me by surprise.
That it sounds like audio is coming out.
I thought it was stereo when I first started to play Call of Duty, and I'm playing games on it, and it was like, okay. And then when I did my speaker test, I was like, nope.
Because I don't, because also like Lex might be around and stuff. So I'm not playing games when I'm testing the speaker. I'm watching movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just arm's length.
It's a really good single firing
speaker. I think you're right now. I think it is resonating through the phone enough that it sounds like it could be stereo.
And you're like, nope, it's emanating. So if you have it down.
I didn't try blocking it. That's hilarious.
It's my number. It's the most. I'm unscientific method of testing, but that's literally what I do when I play.
No, it's not, but I mean, like I used to do that deep dive kind of stuff all the time, where it'd be like, let me see the balance between left channel and right channel. It's going to be the thing. And
I
genuinely didn't even think to try it on the V series. Yeah. The V series to me has always sounded like it's crummy stereo speaker.
Speaker is very nice. It definitely has been upgraded. It's still a single firing speaker.
The quality has not changed at all. It just got louder.
Yeah, exactly.
It's tinny and it can distort at max volume, just like the V27 Pro could distort at max volume. But now your max volume is higher. That's the big change.
But you could lower
everything
it
else on this phone. Yeah. I can't tell you how tickled I am by a phone I would never buy and use as my daily driver. I know so many people, especially in my wife's circles of friends, who would freak out about those camera features. They would flip their lids on the new portrait mode options, on the better 50 millimeter equivalent focal length. Is so much more useful for a good head and shoulders, like a nice going out at night.
Let's
take a good photo of someone looking good. And that ring flash, I've seen so many people with like the silliest clip-on phone accessories to try and light things up. And then here it is just built into the back of the phone in a really practical way. So I love seeing an option that is patently not for me at all. And it's pretty, and it's fashionable, and it feels like it fits this idea of what a fashion phone should be, and it's not a $1,000 phone. I'm so happy to see it.
I think the price point and the features that it offered, I think this is why I called it, in my video, I called it like, you know, the Zeiss optics on a budget. It's more surprises than not. And I think for the V series, for the Pro series, if those features matter to you, you're not going to be disappointed. And honestly, it took me for the speaker thing. It took me a second. I had to double check to make sure that I wasn't, because it sounded almost like it was speakers.
I heard it and just went like, oh yeah, they're just crummy speakers. Whatever. Well, no, because I don't need to test.
And there we are, because that's how we do it. When you hold the phone and you're holding it in more of a sideways configuration like this, the sound bounces off your palm.
Yeah.
And it resonates louder. So you typically don't think it's not. But when you're playing, especially games, when you have to rely on directional audio, first thing that hits you is like, I'm not hearing anything from the left. But I'm like, okay, what's going on? And with the other devices, although they're small and they're you absolutely can tell when there's like a fire, especially with PUBG, when there's a lot of fighting. There's like, you know, effect, things going around you, but you don't know where they're fighting. You're always listening to audio cues, and I was missing all of those. But again, pair of buds or maybe a wired USB-C will fix that issue. But again, still providing us a great experience. I think Vivo is knocking out of the park. Unfortunately, they weren't at the show. That's another year that I don't think Vivo goes to MWC, I think. It wasn't something that they did, but...
Well, also, I kind of feel like a part of that is the unfortunate position that the BBK brands were in before BBK split.
Yeah.
So, like, Oppo is finally getting back into distribution in the EU. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not sure at what stage Vivo is in in bringing their products back to the EU. Well, that's something I've asked, and I just need to get confirmation from their PR.
Yeah.
But the BBK umbrella, I think, is now completely severed. So Vivo and IQOO are now separate entities. They don't have an umbrella parent relationship anymore with Oppo and OnePlus. So moving forward, I feel like Vivo is probably going to be a half step behind Oppo in rebuilding their distribution chain, getting their relationships back up with carriers and like cell phone sales, warehouses and stuff like that. I think it's going to take them a little bit longer just to get back up to speed, where if they had been under the same umbrella, maybe they could have piggybacked on that same distribution or worked out their own licensing with Nokia. Yeah. I think it's just going to take them a little time. But for what they've put out here, I'm so happy, because it also validates so many of the things that I've been talking about for a while. Do we need to be in this lockstep race to try and boost performance and processing power on devices that are going woefully underutilized? Or can you just build a nicer experience around a more power efficient chip that is still going to be plenty capable of getting people through their day? And the Vivo is like this perfect, it's this crown jewel of saying, like, you don't need to spend a lot. You don't need an 8 Gen 3. You don't. You don't need an Apple A17 Bionic Pro Plus Element OP.
Yep.
This is something that is gross overkill for what you really need. And it's cheaper. And it gets better battery life.
No, the combinations that we get in there, processor, display, gaming experience, it is definitely enjoyable.
It's all on point.
You feel,
I mean, to your conversation, and especially with you schooling me on the speaker being mono, I feel very comfortable telling someone, like, hey, if what you say you think you care about is having like a premier mobile gaming experience, this is not going to be the phone for you. No, and that's fine.
That was partially. It'll play games in general. I think it's not.
It does well.
It's not going to be pushing the 120s and the 90 frames of the PUBG or Call of Duty. For me, it's really more fashion forward. Great camera experience. Great overall general UI and performance that you can expect from a device. But it is somewhat tailored to fit into the budget side of what it's intended to be. But it's glad to see again some of the things they brought down are refreshing. I think one thing is the last thing I did want to mention is surprisingly none of the Vivo brands were at MWC this year on the show floor. None of them.
Now, I'm not terribly surprised about that.
Outside of the show floor, and it was more personal and private, personal and off the floor. But it was one of the biggest changes that I noticed from last year to this year. Because Xiaomi took over the Oppo booth, and that's where Xiaomi and Poco.
Yeah.
And Redmi were there this year. And
Xiaomi is not going quiet. They are bringing
full bore. I mean, like seriously,
it's huge.
I even scored a backpack and like some really nice Poco merch, like really cool black and yellow and white Poco merch that Omar went bonkers the moment I brought it. So right, he got a brand new backpack, a brand new blazer. Really cool stuff that he's enjoying. And as soon as I saw this, I knew exactly who was going to. Omar actually is a pretty big Poco fan because he still uses the Poco F5 to play. But even on his computer desk, we got a Poco mouse pad that we got late last year around the holidays. Mm-hmm. So I got that in there and set up really nicely. And it was an enjoyable trip, although very busy, did not include a lot of sleep and not a lot of good eating habits, which I need to undo in many ways. Like I need to spend the next few weeks kind of like, you know, pretty much.
I got to detox.
Yeah. It was a lot
of good stuff. One of the things that could help you detox is maybe some kind of smart wearable device that can help you track fitness trends and
they
activity.
Do that?
And no, there are a few out there. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that these things exist. And they can also kind of like complement your personal style. Like you wear them, so you want them to look good.
That's
obviously
how I do it. Yeah.
It's some kind of like it's like a watch that's smart. It could be a thing that you might want to consider.
Hold on, let me click the button here. I'm not sure what you mean, though.
See, like, yeah, I mean, I'm talking some pretty heady science fiction here, but
very heavy.
If one were, I mean, maybe if you were like a millionaire and you could afford to have like some kind of,
there are some options. There's actually quite a few options on watches. But yeah, no, I'm one of the things. Obviously, you're really horribly alluding into or leading us into. Obviously, is it's a watch that we both got a chance to play with for some time.
Yep.
And we've gotten a few updates. There was a couple of updates, yep. A couple of major updates that came through, which is, I'm glad about that.
It's a OnePlus, so OnePlus. There's always an embargo software experience, and then a close to what the consumer will get software experience, and then this is what it's really like when it launches software and experience.
I think where we are right now is in a really good spot from where what I was expecting on it. Because I first heard about it, obviously, we started looking at it, got the device, started to set it up, and I started to see like what they were promising, what they're trying to deliver. From a general usage smartwatch, the biggest things that I look for in general, when I look at a good, you know, what are my criteria to say that this is a like a legit smartwatch that I would consider using on a daily basis, and or what would basically not allow it to be in that manner. The overall the overall size of the device is a big thing for me. It needs to look like a watch that I'm able to wear. Like and typically size associated also with the size of the battery, because typically larger displays will have larger batteries because you have more space and so on. The aesthetics of the watch too, not only look good, that even that little chin thing that they have on the right side is so minimalistic. Like, I know it's there, but most of the time when you're holding it on the watch, when you're using it, because it's sitting on the opposite angle of where you are, you almost never see it. You just notice the buttons that are there.
See, I like that it's an asymmetry, but that it's a continuous, almost like, it almost looks like kind of a pipe.
Yeah.
That draws it's like directly down.
It's a resting point for me as opposed to that curve. It's a flat line on the right.
Yeah.
But
that's exactly where my wrist is clicking the crown on the Pixel Watch and on the Tick Watch. So anytime I go down to like do push-ups and my wrist bends up and I click.
It was my number one thing as well with the Xiaomi Watch Pro 2, I think the one from last year on the T series.
Oh, yeah.
It was a great design. I love the crown, but I always had to wear the watch sideways. I always have to put the crown inside. It looks off for me.
And I can't do that on a Tick Watch because the second display is static to one orientation.
It is one orientation.
So I can get away with that on the Pixel. I have flipped my Pixel Watch to being reverse crown. I don't like it as much, but I don't activate the crown. Here, I don't have to worry about that at all. So I'm very, very happy.
The design is really nice. The battery life is consistent. I am so happy that it is consistent, that it was not just like, you know, it'll last 4 days. No. In always on display off and running smart mode, it will last you 4 days if you're not doing any workouts. If you do any workouts, it'll shrink it down to about 2 days. But that's still 2 days, full solid 2 days of battery usage with enough battery to carry you through the night to get that night sleeping. And then you can charge it up to 100 in about an hour. I think
I can't sleep with a watch on, so omitting sleep tracking, I got 4 full days.
Yeah.
I'm not 4 days and nights, because as soon as you take it off, it goes into a super low power rest state.
Yeah, exactly.
So 4 full days, and I got a 20% battery warning.
That's what I did.
Which means I had a whole other day of just regular daily use before I needed to charge it. So
battery saver kick in and some things get turned off. Like from a consistent usage, and I'm talking heavy, heavy, heavy notifications coming in from the watch, from my device onto the watch. I'm talking responding to text messages, getting in a notification from, you know, chats, all that stuff. This is a big thing for me because it does require a lot of, how do I explain this? Like, we're running two different processors and two different operating systems in here. One that is known for extended battery life, which you can activate and get a longer battery life on this. You lose a lot of the smart functions out of it, of course, but it's the marriage between the two, where the W5 is working, where the H92, I can't remember the name of the processor, but it's the second processor that we have to run RTOS. And it did it very well. It's hard to tell which function is doing what, if just from looking at the UI. I'll say that all the lower level just general usage of the device were running on the RTOS side, H processor, and everything that needed power, obviously, when you're responding, using voice to text, assistant, all of that stuff that runs on the W5, GPS tracking, all of that good stuff, obviously, because that needs more power in there. I'm very surprised. I mean, an easy recommendation for anybody looking into getting the watch. The black one looks really, really nice in person. I got a chance to see it a couple of times. I'm liking the silver.
I'm liking the silver. Yeah.
And I think because we can change the bands, that experience just looks a lot more like that classic watch that you always expect. For the longest time, I'll say even with TicWatch and all of that, we always get the black one. Like, it's always the darker tone of everything. And I'm glad that OnePlus did that. And
so I went with a hand-cut, hand-stitched maroon, technically an oxblood leather strap. And I just, this combo, it looks so nice. It stands out in a way that my TicWatch was just kind of like a nice functional black casing watch.
And I still applaud TicWatch's approach. Don't get me wrong. Up to this point, TicWatch has been...
I do want to say, though.
Please.
I don't feel that TicWatch got enough credit for their expanded standby mode. I think very few techies really even understood what OnePlus is doing now. TicWatch had kind of a proto version, I think, starting with the TicWatch 3 Pro.
Yes.
Because they had the Qualcomm chip, the Wear 4100, and then they had their own custom coprocessor that went along with it. They didn't do Qualcomm's dual chip solution. They had their own custom chip solution. And they got into trouble because they were saying it's like the Wear 4100 Plus. But they said the like really quietly. Initially, the Wear 4100
like
Plus.
Wasn't there, and then later the like.
Yeah. And then someone had to say, like, oh, no, that's actually not what your watch is doing. But TicWatch's dual screen solution, if you went into the power saver mode, was sort of a proto version of this RTOS. It was still a full-fledged fitness tracker. It was just using the passive second screen. It kept track of your steps and your heart rate, but you wouldn't get notifications to your watch. I don't think Tick ever got enough credit for that, because that was like 20 days of runtime if you wanted to run it exclusively as a standalone timepiece and a pedometer and a heart rate tracker. What OnePlus is doing is like next level on top of that. Yeah. The fact that they took everything that they learned from their miserable failure of their first smartwatch and then just put all of it in here as the backup mode. On the Watch 2 is genius.
Yeah, and I think they're also riding the wave now with finally Wear OS 4 being available on more devices than just Samsung devices. Xiaomi did it. I mean, they cared. They're one of the first ones to even have the Wear team on stage with the 13T series announcement. But no, the configuration that we have in here is so smooth. It is so consistently, like, the refresh rate never drops. It runs consistent. The display is gorgeous. The images on it show up really nice. I like that little bit of that curvature on the side of the glass. Again, that's just me, so that when you're gliding on, you feel like an edge on it. And it's bright enough to use it outdoors, indoors, like all the functions that you typically expect for what you want the watch to do. But it does all of those, and then it lasts for a long time. And even when you do charge it, it's so quick. Like, it's almost like you could sleep with it for the 4 days, get through all the whole thing, wake up in the morning, put it on the charger, and then it'll be ready by the time you're ready to go out. And if you don't even, it'll last you for another couple of days or so till you get back.
Like, a full charge is an hour, but it's just like their phones. Like, I don't leave it for a full charge.
I don't have to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the exciting part.
I've seen a lot of people that are kind of reaching. I saw one headline that I rolled my eye so hard, I think I dislocated my right eye. It was like, OnePlus Watch 2 gives you 100-hour battery life with a... No, I think they tried to make it sound like, because you got 100-hour battery life, that gives you, like, a huge compromise. And, like, I know I'm going to regret giving them the click, but I just got to know. And I go into their article, and they're like, this watch doesn't have an ECG. And, like, that has nothing to do with the battery life. So and then I went back into like my Google feed news settings and just went, never recommend this website to me ever again. Because that was literally this. I'm dumber for having read their article here. This is such a wonderful about face. I am so shocked at, because I didn't even know. I don't know if you would have been with me on this. I didn't know if OnePlus would ever revisit trying to do a watch. The first watch was so bad. Poorly received.
And
I thought they would just walk away from it forever.
But they also kind of skipped the whole year without talking about another watch again. So it took us a long time making it.
And think about they skipped the right year because look at all the drama and the fallout. Like Fossil's leaving the scene. Mobvoi's been really quiet. Samsung has had kind of exclusive access. The first Pixel watch was good, but it was a little rough around the edges. I need to get the Pixel watch 2 on Marie's wrist because hers is actively trying to fall apart as fast as it possibly can.
Oh, man, I remember.
It's really not great. That
one. Yeah.
More pieces are starting to just sort of fall off. The back plate doesn't stay put at all anymore because we tried to kind of like re-glue and it's been a thing. The Pixel Watch 2, much better built than the Pixel Watch 1. But OnePlus jumped over all of that.
Yeah.
They skipped all of that, all of those dramatic teething pain moments for Wear OS and came in at exactly the right time to do something that now I think every other watch manufacturer is probably going to emulate. Having a whole second operating system just to cover this low power stuff is a great idea.
No, absolutely.
And I think they were the right company to show it off.
Yeah, and I think overnight, I don't know if you, well, so for me, at least when you use it overnight, it does have a hibernation mode. It has a very low power, low power state mode that runs.
It'll
do the tracking, but it just doesn't need, because it knows you don't need the display. They're like, okay, we're going to just turn off everything. We're going to go black and white on the display. We'll do everything we want in the background. And then as you wake up in the morning, it, depending on when your alarms are set, it'll actually know it has a built-in timer. And if you want to wake up
early,
you
can
wake
up. Yeah, I know. It's so good.
It just runs so nice. Like I said, it's to me, having it with me on the show and not having to worry every night to charge it or every other day to charge it has been a blessing. And when I was able to charge it, I didn't even have to bother letting it charge to 100% and it was still running. And I'm running so for the last 2 days. I still have 39%.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And this is, if I wake up in the morning and I see it's only got 25%, that's my whole day.
Yeah.
I'm good. I don't have to worry about trying to find a way to charge it. So Michael Corcoran is asking, forgive me if this has been answered, I wasn't here, but is it going to have Google Assistant support? It already does.
Out of the box.
TK and I were able to troubleshoot a problem with Google Assistant.
Yeah, that was a little scary for me because I'm like plagued every once in a while. I get the device that ends up being the borked version of something, and I was dealing with another piece of tech that I'm reviewing that also was borked for other reasons. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, Gemini is Gemini, and it's not really ready. And Google's starting to push Gemini a lot more. Like I've tried to use Assistant on a few devices, and it's asking me like, would you like to try Gemini? No, next. No, Gemini's not ready. But yeah, no, thank you for that recommendation. That was
Gemini is fun, but it's not something I can rely on. And
not as your phone's assistant yet. Yeah,
no.
Even though it incorporates the Google Assistant functions in, it still does not jive the same way. It doesn't run. Mm-hmm.
It kind of breaks your compatibility with the watch. So well, yeah. There you go.
It does it in a weird way where it just stops the microphone from listening, which because it's such a weird thing to do for a watch. But the moment I follow you, we turned off Gemini, uninstalled Gemini, restarted the phone. The phone turned, the watch worked fine. Speaker works great. I love the size of the display. And you can also remap the buttons to do whatever you want. If you want to use Google Pay, all the stuff, download Google apps, WhatsApp, YouTube Music, Spotify, Strava, the apps that you want to get.
I will agree. To me, I have two gripes, and neither of them, for my needs, neither of them are insurmountable.
Okay.
I am very lucky to be a somewhat overweight dude in my mid-40s where I... knock on wood, I have massive skin arthritis and some other autoimmune diseases, but I have not had any kind of heart, cardiac, or arrhythmia where I would really want to have an ECG to kind of regularly check rhythm and make sure I haven't needed it. I hope I don't need it anytime soon. in the life of this watch, I'm hoping that that's not a thing that I will need, because I would be sad. I would have to go and switch to another watch that did have that. But that's not been a concern for me. I do agree with some of the criticisms that in terms of the design, that the buttons being asymmetrical and the top button looking like a crown, but not giving us the ability to twist to scroll through. I kind of wish that they had just gone with two symmetrical buttons. I think that would have looked a little cleaner.
Because it's inviting you to turn it as if it is a crown, and because every and other solutions we've seen lately has had crowns.
Yes.
And that, yes, that was... It took me some time to adjust knowing that it's not. Like, for more time or so, I keep trying to spin, and I'm like, it's not spinning. What's going on? And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not. It's an aesthetic thing. Yeah.
It's an aesthetic thing. I can't say it bothers me to the point that I'm like looking at it and going, oh, ugh, because I also was a fan of tick watches, and you know, like the older tick watches had two crown style buttons that were not active crown. Twisting crowns. So I was able to get over it. But I do agree that from an aesthetic standpoint, I think it would have looked better if the buttons had matched. But if that's the best I've got in criticizing this thing, I think OnePlus has scored a tremendous victory in fleshing out their sort of ecosystem of accessories. It's not dependent on you having a OnePlus. There's nothing about the watch that is dependent on you owning a OnePlus phone. You
can
have the entire experience if you want to try it with a Moto or a Sony or a Pixel or a Samsung. It's you just install the OHealth app and you don't miss out on anything on that.
I am
very pleasantly surprised. If they had made a second watch, I think we all would have assumed it would have been better than the first.
Yeah.
I was not expecting their first proper Wear OS device to come out swinging and become one of the best solutions of the year.
Exactly. It is genuinely to start the year off this way with it, I think it was a very
huge.
This is the track record right now that we have from OnePlus. Ever since the Open, we've been hitting it out of the park. Like 12, amazing. Yeah. 12R, really good. The Buds 3, very good Buds.
And solid.
But the
OnePlus tablet is a good tablet.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Their adjustment period, it's almost like we had to go through over that little hump and then we went back straight up. They fixed their relationship. We got the things that we didn't have before. Like we lost there's no more single SIM version of OnePlus devices, but now you're able to put in an eSIM as easily as you want, activate it on the fly. I mean, I activated it on my 12 when I took it with me for the trip. It's just nice. It is absolutely a beautiful breath of fresh air. And again, continuing it with the watch, it's very good. It's not just a little bit good. It's very good. And I told our PR friends, I really hope you guys have this watch again, next to the 12 at Best Buy stores. This has to be seen by people, and you hold it and you see how well built this thing is. Because images are one part, but again, a lot
insufficient.
Of people like that. Yeah. You need that tactile feeling and experience.
It's insufficient to hold it up and then say like, it's built really nice and it's pretty. It's a stainless steel with a sapphire crystal front face.
Yeah, like, 2.5D glass. Yeah,
not just that it looks nice. I'm trying to think, you know, like so many of these other watches have been like aluminum and Gorilla Glass. I think like, because Samsung has done a pretty good job of like really doing a good job of detailing what materials go into their products. Am I going back to like the Huawei, the Watch?
Oh,
was that one of the last ones that also did like stainless steel and sapphire?
That was like
there had to have been another Wear OS.
The original one sitting here somewhere.
Yeah,
I gave that one as the OG classic smartwatch that I loved. The design, the build, everything.
I never let mine go. I don't know that the battery still holds a charge.
I'm sure. I don't even know where the charger for it is. But it just based on pure principles, that watch stays in the library. You're right. It is. It's hard to find the same combination, because even on the
because that's Black more Moon, expensive materials to put into a watch that is selling. I mean, it's a premium MSRP. It's $300 watch. It's not cheap, but they are doing that other silly subsidizing thing where it's like, if you've got a Hello Kitty watch in a drawer somewhere, you can send it in and get $50 off the price of your.
I applaud their effort of allowing us to have those experiences. I like that.
Oh, and I hope they Simon says Hypno. He's saying the Huawei GT2 Pro had steel and sapphire. I mean, like other Wear OS watches. I can't think of any other Wear OS wearables that have been built with steel and sapphire.
Except one of the quite a few.
But I was going to say which wasn't one of the Galaxy watches, the Android ones, weren't they steel and sapphire?
Do I have that wrong? I'm not 100% sure. You may be right. I don't, because there's been so many. I mean, and I can say that the last two generations are not. They haven't done steel. Oh, maybe the Classic.
I could have sworn. The Watch 5
Classic.
I mean, don't let me give Samsung credit they don't deserve. we don't need to like derail the show and look up the history of other Wear OS watches, but like when we talk about premium, I mean, we do need to acknowledge build materials that contribute to the price of the phone, price of a gadget, price of a watch, price of a phone. And again, OnePlus is delivering something that feels kind of unique. And if you don't have an opportunity, it's always going to be the big drawback without having a carrier relationship. If you don't have the opportunity to pick this up and really like touch and use it, our videos and our photos aren't going to do it justice. It looks like metal and glass, just like anything else. There is something a little different about knowing it's not aluminum and Gorilla Glass, it's steel and sapphire. And that makes it nicer. It makes it much more friendly. Yeah.
Exactly what you did with like a nice strap, maybe like a nice leather strap to just kind of complement the experience. Yeah.
And just stock 22mm lug. So I have so many watch straps ready to go. I mean, I've got like the rustic stuff, the hand cut leather, I've got sport bands. I just need to get a new steel bracelet for it and I'm set. I'm trying not to speak ill because I really do like the Pixel Watch 2 for what it is. Mm-hmm. But to me, the Pixel Watch 2 is a Fitbit that makes me anxious to do more aggressive outdoorsy things with it. So it kind of betrays the mission of a Fitbit. I don't want to take that on a really technical hike because it's a wraparound glass, not sapphire. It's a wraparound glass product that if I knock it against some rocks, it's going to die. I'm going to kill that thing. I don't have the same worries with the OnePlus watch. It's built and it feels like a different kind of outdoor friendly wearable. And that to me is just, it feels a little special in that regard. I don't know. I'm waxing really philosophical here, and it's the emotional stuff when you talk about watches, the intangibles that people get into with their fashion, and OnePlus is kind of doing it for me.
And I think the smartwatches have a very unique part in our technical ecosystem, because they're one of the few things that actually relate to a mechanical tool that we used to and that we always appreciated growing up and used all the time. So the smartwatch builds on that, where the smartphone didn't exist when we were kids. It's just a new medium that we grow with it, and we started using it, tablet and so on, the phone evolutionary experience. But the watch as it stands, the more it looks like a regular classic watch, the more we appreciate it. But then the material that it uses, it is as important as the internals, especially for the aesthetics part, because it is essentially, I mean, again, one of the main things I appreciated when we saw with the Watch S3 from Xiaomi, the ability of changing the design on the watch, on the top part of the watch, by just snapping on a ring and removing and putting it on. That's the thing. Watches are unique. They're aesthetically built in that manner. And many people buy different watches because they want that different look with whatever they're wearing. So it's absolutely a piece of art that lives on your arm. And with the OnePlus Watch 2 now, we get to have that and have the smart functions with it. smart replies, assistant functionality if you need to use it, music playback, 32 gigs of internal storage in case you want to be able to save a couple of playlists in there. You can connect your buds directly in there. It has that built-in UI for the buds that kind of is really cool.
So it's pretty cool.
To me, it's a lot of these little things that typically you don't think of. But when the package is done correctly, it's built in this way, it's very nice. Again, the spinning crown, that most people will, I mean, within the first day you notice it, and after that it stopped because you kind of adjust to it anyways. But you're right. I mean, there are little touches here and there.
Someone in my comments said that was a total deal breaker. So you just can't buy. Imagine having a watch that has a round button on it and it's not a crown.
How
so
dare
I guess
you?
That's just a big, it's just a big fail. Better luck next year, OnePlus. You know, some good ideas here. Maybe wait for Gen 4 or Gen 5. And then it'll be worth it for the monies. If my Samsung videos are underperforming, then
we'll have to figure out something to bring back the money. Plus. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
I mean, this guy writes comments on YouTube videos on the internet. I'm sure he knows what he's talking about. So
that's usually how it is.
Yeah, he's probably an expert. We should end this now.
Yeah, no. I'm going to be very honest with you. I am running on. There's like a single candle running in the back right there.
I meant to bring it up. Like even Josh popped in for a minute and said like, "Hey guys, I got some in and out. I'm gonna go like recover from travel and stuff." And like I should have shouted him out. And we were in the middle of another flow.
Yeah,
but we've had such a good crew to chat some stuff with here, and it's an embarrassment of riches. I was really down on this MWC because I felt like, oh well, we had all these big announcements in 2023, at the end of 2023, and yet somehow still all of these companies have come out swinging for one of the hottest seasons of the year. Like all of these products are bangers.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy to see that the specialization of Android hasn't been diluted, because so many of these are like, I know who in my family I would absolutely recommend a Vivo to, a Xiaomi to, if we had access to these phones here in the United States. And now OnePlus has just been on a tear. This is like the most successful stretch of product releases I think the company has ever put out. Yeah. And right now is the absolute best time because, you know, like, as far as everyone else is concerned, the iPhone won and smartphones are a thing we talk about in the past tense. So now's a great time for us Android fans to like shake it up and play and experiment and check some things out. And even if you don't live with it, like, you know, pick it up, maybe return it in your return window. But like, if you're not trying to experience some of this stuff, you're really missing out on some exciting feature and functionality improvements.
Yeah, no, I think it is a very good story to follow and to see that, in my opinion, OnePlus coming back to their prime time. Like, again, we're just, you know, one after another. 14 Ultra is, I mean, the story is still beginning on this one. For the most part, nobody has it, I think. I've seen some videos of people unboxing the Chinese version of it because that one was available to sell. And you'll know right away, by the way, is the color of the backing. If it's a ceramic back, that's a China-only version. The international, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's just the black and white one that we see, the black leather and white leather. Yeah. No mention of a green one, although, you know, I wouldn't.
It'll make me sad because I had the sort of off green 12S and I loved my green 13. And
yeah,
I would love to have kept that streak going, but I don't think we're going to get. Yeah,
I don't disagree with you, my friend. It is absolutely a beautiful color. And the camera option here is just really good, just very nicely built. And I can't wait to see. I mean, I got a chance again to play with it a little bit on the show floor. But yeah, exactly. 12S to 13 Pro Ultra. But we'll see. We'll see how things go. And hopefully, we'll see how things go with more stuff coming out. I mean, obviously, MWC is done, but there's more things coming in. We saw, obviously, nothing made the announcement on their phone. We saw the design finally. There was a party that they had.
They've got a whole bunch of accessories that I think we're going to have to start like trying to get our hands on.
Exactly.
I tried to set it up for today, but I accidentally ran down the battery while I was shooting it. I'm hopefully going to have a video out soon, either tomorrow or over the weekend, on the new Saramonic mics.
Oh, nice.
So they've got this really great, like, full-on recharge 2-mic system.
Exactly.
So we'll be talking about these guys very, very, very soon. I still haven't gotten the final on publishing that rugged laptop video. I guess we'll see.
There's, yeah.
At some point, I'm going to send them an invoice, and they're going to be like, oh, have you posted the video yet? I'll be like, you guys, I've been telling you, you haven't said, but you owe me money. So I love this laptop. So many things happening. And then I think we're going to be in for a viscerally competitive laptop year once we start talking about laptop announcements over the summer for back to school.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's usually the big push for laptops. Yeah.
It's silly to say like, oh, you know, let's start planning for that in March. But I think this is going to be a year where a lot of companies are catching up at a variety of price points. So not just, do we have a good solution to fight the MacBook at like $1,500, but also like student grade machines and like, you know, corporate professional mobile workstations and things like that.
Yep.
So as much as like, I'm even just trying to like figure out what I want to do to talk about phones. Like I want to make a video on the 12S Ultra now just getting HyperOS. Like that should be a fun update video, but it's like, I've got 7 other devices on my desk that I've got to finish stuff
I hoped to finish the backlog prior to leaving to MWC. Unfortunately, I came back and I have more and more stuff to do. Primarily for me, it's going to be the Genshin Impact phone. The 12 Genshin Impact. That's going to be for tomorrow. It'll be an unboxing. It'll be a quick, just a little intimate unboxing, checking out the experience of what you get in the box. And again, seeing TK dressed up in all purple for one episode. I actually have a really exciting keyboard, a mechanical keyboard video that is, I've been using it for quite some time. I'm very excited. It's a very much themed, keyboard. I can't show it on camera yet because it launches tomorrow, but I have a few things to kind of finish up as well. And, you know, hopefully be able to, you know, get back on track with all the different things. I also got another mini PC, while I was out, to be able to check out as well. So that'll be hopefully next week, probably latter part of next week, checking that out. And, tech is fun. Tech is cool. I like it. And I'm glad that MWC was as good as it is this year. And I really hope next year you and I can both, basically team up on it and get it done. Maybe not as long of a trip, but I mean, if it is, it'll be also exciting to see how we can get more tech.
Yeah.
It's an ever-changing, exciting show. It's literally the one event a year for mobile tech that is the quintessential default.
I'm just glad that it really does still serve a purpose because we were having conversations leading up to it and like in CES, like what do you do at an MWC if all the major, like I already have an X100 Pro, what do you talk about? And I'm so glad that there was, it's not just like, oh, there were a few things, just like, this was an exciting show for mobile. So, and also just to prep folks, my podcast on Monday is going to be Juan at his most delirious because I'm exhausted and sleep deprived. And I've had some minor health issues that aren't serious, but have slowed me down. So this Monday was supposed to be the pajama podcast, but we had too much news to cover.
Yeah.
This next Monday is going to be Juan rambling out his rear about whatever we decide happens in the in the chat. And like, I spent a half hour talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender. It could be that maybe that's what all we're going to talk about again is Juan's rambling diatribe of a soapbox on the conversion of animation to live action.
Well, make sure to catch Juan's SGGQA. That's going to be coming up on Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, as usual. And of course, we'll be back next week for another episode of The Best of Our Week with more things that we probably couldn't talk about in this episode, but we'll definitely try to cover next week. Because isn't that the way we do it? We always just tease you with nothing and we just show up something else. But I want to say thanks to everybody for hanging out with us. Thanks definitely to Barry for hanging out with us this late as well. Farhan, everybody in the chat, we always appreciate you and appreciate you, Juan, for letting me jump on your show on Monday.
I was so glad to have you
on mobile
of
all experiences. And I was like, scheduling it during an event like that is just, you just don't schedule. You just exist and you try to gravitate from one place to another.
All right. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody. Take care. We'll see you next week. And good night, Gracie.
Bam.